It's called The Traveler. I've traveled the world the last few years. Sometimes I think of home, and even Stone Cold has to fight the tears. Another car, bus, or plane takes me to faraway places. What I remember most is all the smiling faces. Short people, tall people, people with glasses. The bottom line is I'll whip all your asses.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
You like fighting a woman?
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Come over here and fight me.
Delete. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
I can't believe I found that clip. I knew I still had it on my computer somewhere, but I could just never find it. It's not the greatest quality in the world. It sounds like it was taped off a TV using a tape recorder. That's because it was. But I do believe that is now the only full audio of that poem that you can find anywhere on the internet. I know this because I have scoured the internet looking for this thing for years. And there's only a handful of episodes of that old Idiot Savant show on YouTube. And unfortunately, I think the episode this came from was from February of 97. And the only episodes I've been able to find are from January. And none of them have that particular segment. So I think this may be the only version, but shout out to one of our listeners, Phil, who had sent me an abbreviated clip that was floating around of this on Facebook, and I saw it, and it bothered me that it was only like a partial clip, it was an edited clip, so I started searching around my hard drive again. I talked about that clip on the podcast a while back, and lo and behold, I found it. I found the WAVE file. I love that poem, especially when the audience is, they appear to be touched by what Stone Cold is saying. Only for him to turn it around on them and lower the boom there at the end. So I thought that was great. This is episode 561 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, August 26, 2018. In case you haven't figured it out yet, I am the Solid Monster. And I am finally getting this glass out of my knee this week. So I'm all excited here. Not really, that I'm having knee surgery on Tuesday. But I had a lot of people at the meetup last weekend asked me about that. I even showed you guys some of the gnarliness on the knee, for those of you who asked. And yeah, so I'm going to get that taken care of this week. Hopefully I'm not off my feet for more than a few days. I guess we'll see. They're going to get me some kind of cryo cuff. I have to fill it with ice, and I have to use it on my leg. Apparently all the athletes use it. I don't know. It's a pain in the ass to me. But yeah, that's what I got coming up this week. So I'm not really looking forward to that too much. But before we get into all the different stuff here, I want to just show some love, as always, here at the top of the show to Audible. Audible's been a great partner, a great sponsor of this show now for a very long time. And I know a lot of you have already cashed in on your Audible trial, but a lot of you have not. Well, this is your chance to do so. Audibletrial.com/Solid Monster is the link that you want to use. It's not enough to just punch that link in, by the way. I think some people think, oh, I put the link in, and you should, you know, hopefully that helps you. I'm like, well, it really doesn't unless you sign up. There is a 30-day trial. When you do so, you get one free audiobook of your choice, and they have over 180,000 different titles to choose from. So I don't care if you're looking for a wrestling book, a nonfiction book, a biography, some science fiction story, or a crime novel. You cannot tell me that you will not be able to find some sort of book or story that you can use your link to cash in on. And even if you end the trial before you get billed, if you find that Audible just isn't for you or you're not using it that much, the book belongs to you. You don't have to give it back. It's not like a library book. The library book person will not come after you. The librarian will not come after you. So anyway, audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. Every time you use that link and sign up, it helps out the podcast. So hey, thank you for that. And also, you can make a PayPal donation, thesolidmonster.com, right-hand side of the page. You will see the button, $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out here on the show, like these fine people. Thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez. It would not be a sound-off without mentioning him here as part of this roll call. So hopefully John's doing okay. Yvonne Bruiser Balick, who I believe, if not my first, was my first or second ever donator here on this podcast. So it's good to see Yvonne still around. The Florida Freebird, Brian Becerra. Out of Control, Cody Thomas. Beast Mode, Brock Joseph. Raymond the Mountie Medina. Sean Nasty Boy Nilsson. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray, who was Velvet long before the Velveteen Dream was. The Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T. The Show-Off, Corey Van Dam. Stephen Handyman Halistick. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, Brian the Cleaver Carpenter, Downtown, Kenny Brown, Short Fuse, Sean Simpson, The Anarchist, Andrew Heller, The Portland Pop Star, Paul Hamilton, and last but not least here, The Angry Tech, Eddie Rua. If you're having problems with your phone or your computer, you can call The Angry Tech and let him fix it for you. Just call him directly at 347-367-8708. Find him on facebook.com/theangrytech or Instagram at The Angry Tech. And he's also on YouTube and the Angry Tech name as well. So any issues, you can hit up Eddie. Eddie's a good guy. I saw him at the meetup last weekend. So thank you to Eddie for coming out. Hey, you know that Call of Duty guy that I talked about a few weeks ago, the one who left his girlfriend? His girlfriend, who was once dubbed Mexico's sexiest weather girl, mind you, he dumped her to play Call of Duty and to win a Call of Duty world title. Everyone said, "Oh well, that's what he does for a living. He's a professional gamer," and so he felt that he did not have the time or the energy to devote to both. He had to make a decision, and the decision he made was he dumped his girlfriend. He kicked her to the curb, although he did so respectfully. You know, he did so on YouTube. But, he decided I have to dump her and I have to put all my focus on Call of Duty. I want to win a Call of Duty championship. Well, his team competed in the Call of Duty League Championship this week, and they lost. That's like giving up the IWGP belt to cash in on the Universal title, and then being pinned. But don't cry too much for him, because according to the 5,000 people who messaged me, he makes about $10 million a year, or so you would think listening to some of these people. $10 million a year, $5 million a year, $800,000 a year, something crazy like that, just for playing Call of Duty. So he'll be okay. The people who have asked me about the House of Glory matches from last weekend. I mentioned that I had the opportunity to do a little bit of commentary on the Impact World title match. Austin Aries was at the House of Glory show, High Intensity 7, a couple weeks ago, and he defended the Impact World Championship against one of the bigger stars of House of Glory, homegrown stars, Ken Broadway. That match is either going to be up by the time you listen to this podcast, or if not, it will be up very soon. On the House of Glory YouTube channel, they've already released a couple of teaser clips. I enjoyed the match. I thought that the match itself was pretty good, and Ken Broadway is one of the rising stars in that House of Glory promotion. Very well liked by the crowd. And I like the whole idea of Austin Aries as the traveling champion. I think I mentioned that last week. It just has sort of like an NWA vibe to it, which I guess, you know, Nick Aldis now is the NWA champion, and they do the same thing with him. But in any event, for those of you who have been asking me, is the match going to go up? It is, and if it isn't by the time you hear this, it will be very soon. So if you do check out the match, go easy on me. I had the, it was a 3-man booth. It was myself, JD from New York. We had, you know, Ben is another announcer for House of Glory as well. Matthew Ryan Shapiro. Actually, Ben was not on that match. That's took his place for that match, but he did call the rest of the show. So anyway. You can just keep it locked into the HOG YouTube channel. It should be going up there, as well as some other stuff that I have done for House of Glory. So, very exciting. So check that out. Unfortunately, I got to leave with a real quick item here. Another wrestling celebrity death. It seems like there's been a lot of death that we've talked about lately on this podcast. Last week, it was Aretha Franklin, right? WrestleMania 3. Well, at WrestleMania 4... it was Robin Leach, who used to host a popular TV show when I was younger called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous, which I guess today all you kids out there would call Cribs on MTV. I love it when I do my old man gimmick. You know, old man Solomon over here. But anyway, Robin Leach, he would have a bunch of wrestlers on his show back in the day. I'm pretty sure he had multiple wrestlers, but the one that is most remembered is the Million Dollar Man, right? Because that fit the gimmick. DiBiase and Virgil were on one of the episodes and showing Robin Leach around his home that wasn't really his. It was actually Vince McMahon's house. Anyway, Robin Leach died this week at the age of 76. He suffered complications from a stroke that he suffered last November. I believe it was what they call a TIA, or a mini stroke. I know he was sent to a rehab facility after that. I think it's a little misleading. You hear mini stroke, you're like, oh, okay, it's not a big deal. No, actually, it is still a very big deal, especially if you're someone who unfortunately is hit by one. And I think that's what did him in the end. But I'll never forget his WrestleMania appearance back in 88, because he carried the championship belt down to the ring. He let all the fans touch it as he was coming down the aisle. All their dirty little paws, he let them put them on the belt. It was like it was the Stanley Cup or something. Like, I never understood it. Like, the Stanley Cup, and I think they do this also with the trophy in the NBA, where I'm pretty sure this was the NBA. Maybe it was the NFL. I can't remember. You know, maybe it was the Super Bowl. But I was watching something a few months ago, or earlier this year, and there's that one person. I'm almost positive now it was the Super Bowl. Like, the veteran or whatever, who slowly carries the trophy down the middle, and you have players on either side, and they're touching it. But then you have those players who, like, put their mouths on it. Like, the germaphobe in me is like, why would you do that? Everyone's touching that thing. Oh, here, let me kiss it. Ugh. But anyway, that's kind of what this was like, and he's bringing the belt down to the ring. Everyone's, you know, touching it, and he even walked over to show Donald Trump in the front row. Of course, that, you know, WrestleMania 4 and 5, Trump Plaza in Atlantic City, and Donald was in the front row for both shows, and Robin Leach walked over to him to show him the championship. But this was supposedly the debut of the Winged Eagle title that the Macho Man won in the tournament later that night. I say supposedly because one of the great little Easter eggs from back then, if you pay attention, when Hulk Hogan is backstage, this is about a month before WrestleMania, they had that live main event special on NBC, which I believe was the first one they ever did. They did another one in 89, and I think the last live main event special they did was in 1990. That was the one with Hogan and Savage, and Buster Douglas was brought in because Mike Tyson got knocked out. It was supposed to be Tyson. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. But Hogan is backstage on this main event special about a month before Mania, and he's cutting a promo about his big rematch that's coming up in the show with Andre the Giant. This is their first big singles rematch for the championship coming out of WrestleMania 3 the year before. And Hogan's cutting this promo, and he's in the promo backstage. He's wearing, I guess, what's referred to as the classic 1986 Hogan belt, which is a beautiful belt, by the way. I'm a big like belt mark. I remember all those designs, and I don't think that belt gets enough love. But he's wearing that belt. He's rocking the baby oil. He's all orange. Hogan, that is, not Trump. And then when he comes out for the live match, he's wearing a completely different belt. And it just so happens to be the very first time, I believe, ever on TV that we see the Winged Eagle Championship. No big fancy presentation, no mention of it, no nothing. Just there it is, around his waist. So WrestleMania was technically not the first time that it was used. I've seen some people over the years make reference to that as the first appearance. It isn't. And I'm still waiting for an explanation about how he could be backstage cutting a promo wearing one belt and come out wearing a completely different belt. But anyway, I will forever associate Champagne Wishes, Caviar Dreams, and the Winged Eagle belt with Robin Leach. SummerSlam was last Sunday. If you want my full thoughts, the full hour-long review is up on our YouTube channel. Thank you to the nearly 170,000 of you who checked out that video over the week. The final Twitter poll results, we had a huge response here. Almost 5,000 votes, that's WrestleMania numbers there, to this Twitter poll. 60% thumbs up, 40% thumbs down. As it turns out, most people were in agreement with me that this was a thumbs-up show overall, which I got quite a bit of flack for, especially on YouTube. I guess you get hate for anything on YouTube. YouTube is kind of like, that's just the way YouTube is. But I got a lot of hate on that, And had I given the show a thumbs down, I would have been accused of being too negative. So it really is just a no-win situation. But it's funny, I had one person, I had one commenter on YouTube, post a comment under my review saying, "You are nothing but a yes man." And I had a nice belly laugh at that one. I even put the image up in the Facebook group. It's like, you must be new here. I've been accused of a lot of things. Being a yes man is not one of them. So I thought that was kind of funny. But I did. I thought AJ Styles and Samoa Joe had the best match of the night, despite the disqualification at the end there, which did make sense because it was obvious that they were, you know, going to, you know, keep this feud going, and they had this idea in mind of what they wanted to do at the end of the match with AJ's family. We don't get to see kind of a heavy angle like that very often. You know, his wife, his kid, are at ringside. I thought it worked. I thought they played their parts to perfection. I thought it was great. Demon Balor returning for the first time, I think, all year, and killing Baron Corbin in 90 seconds was exactly what it should have been, and people went nuts to see the Demon. The SmackDown Women's title match, I thought the triple threat was better than I expected it to be with Carmella in there. Because Carmella, as great of a character as she is on TV, she is not, clearly not the level of in-ring performer that Charlotte is or Becky is. I mean, if you rank these people, there's just no person in their right mind is going to rank Carmella ahead of the two of them. But I thought she held her own, and they ended up having a pretty good match. And even the turn, you know, the big heel turn after the match, dumb as it may have been, it got the biggest reaction of anything on that entire show. Rollins winning the Intercontinental Championship back from Dolph Ziggler in the opener, I thought they had, you know, an excellent match. Ronda Rousey winning her first women's championship. Again, it played out exactly the way that it should have. It should not have been a long match. People think, oh, buried Alexa, buried wrestlers because the MMA women came in and destroyed them. Hello? We've had this guy in the roster called Brock Lesnar who's been doing the same thing now for years. Now, with Brock, I think they just sort of booked themselves into a corner where he destroyed everybody, and so there was nobody left. I think there are people on the roster just, you know, physically who can, you know, match up a hell of a lot better with Ronda than Alexa would. So I wouldn't have Ronda just run through everybody in the division the way they kind of did with Brock. But I think, you know, look, she's still very early in her run. Would I put the championship on her so soon? Probably not, but I think they have an idea in mind for her and Charlotte at WrestleMania next year. I think that's where all roads lead, and she's improving, and the fans haven't turned on her yet. I got to tell you, I'm very surprised, just knowing how fickle these crowds can be and how they've been pushing Ronda, that people haven't resented her so much for it that they start booing her, because she really doesn't get booed. She comes out, she gets a great response, and I think she's improving in terms of when they put a microphone in her hand. She really was very nervous at the beginning, and I think it's less and less as time goes on. So I think they've played, look, they've played the string out with her perfectly so far. Hopefully it doesn't, you know, blow up in their face at some point. But I thought that played out exactly the way it had to. Bryan and Miz, I know some people were disappointed. I was kind of stunned. Parts of that match were so quiet, you can literally hear a pin drop. That's how quiet it was. But I still thought they had a good match. There was nothing really wrong. It wasn't a terribly exciting match, but it was the first, I think, of multiple matches that we can expect the two of them to have. And they could do better, but I thought it was good. So overall, I couldn't give the show a thumbs down. Now, that's not to say that it was all good, because it wasn't. I hated what they did with Kevin Owens. I thought that was bullshit. And not that he lost. I expected him to lose. But Kevin Owens, I don't care if you're not a Kevin Owens fan. Oh, he's out of shape. Oh, he doesn't look like a champion. He doesn't look like a wrestler. You know, the fact is this, in 2018, you could say that about a lot of different people. It's not all about that anymore. Kevin Owens is a talented guy who I find to be, you know, very entertaining. And I think that here's a guy who has been your top champion on the brand before. He's been positioned as a headliner, at least for a while. And even if he's not a headliner, I mean, he's one of the top guys on the Raw brand. And to see him jobbed out like that, and there was no follow-up the next night, I was sort of like, well, maybe he'll come out and he'll cost Braun the briefcase the next night, and that'll be his great revenge. And he never even showed up on the show. So I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know if he's hurt, and they just tried to minimize his ring time. I'll tell you this much, if he's hurt, that's a hell of a way that's a hell of a way to use a guy who's hurt. I mean, Braun, I mean, shit, man, he knocked the shit out of this guy. And then he chokeslammed him on the metal ramp. That couldn't have felt too good. So I sure hope that there's some sort of long-term plan here. Maybe he still will cost Braun the briefcase. Maybe Braun's going to cash in at the next pay-per-view and have the match won, and out comes Kevin Owens, and Kevin Owens gets his great revenge at Hell in a Cell by costing Braun Strowman his Money in the Bank contract. That could still happen. But that doesn't change the fact that what they did with him at SummerSlam was bullshit. You know, that's just not how you... You know, I don't know what was going through their heads with that whole thing. Even I heard Steve Austin even talking about it on his show, and he wasn't much of a fan of that either. I don't blame him. You know, so the kickoff show is the only other thing I wanted to mention here, because I thought the kickoff show was just a giant waste of time. Rusev and Andrade Cien Almas wrestling in a building that's 75% empty is just a complete insult to the two of them. And also to Lana and Zelina Vega, because they were out there as well. But I just thought that was... if you're going to do that match on the kickoff show... Because really, of all the matches on that kickoff show, that was the one that I think a lot of people probably would have been looking forward the most to. You know, they've been getting some good reactions on TV, get the women involved. I don't know why you wouldn't end the kickoff show with that. Just open with the Revival and the B-Team. I don't care if it's for the titles or not. Those titles don't mean shit at this point. And you end the pre-show with Rusev and Cien Almas' match. Instead, they opened with it, and the building was practically empty. People thought I was being generous when I said, oh, the building was half full. Somebody tweets me a photo from inside the building, and it was a hell of a lot more than just half empty. I was like, wow, is there anybody there? It was embarrassing. But if you want to hear the full review, it's up on YouTube right now if you missed it. I go into more detail there. What I wanted to do here up front, there is another big event coming up, and it has nothing to do with WWE. It's a little show called All In. And after all these months of hype and build and all the sort of groundswell of support that there's been for this show from the bottom up, you know, grassroots, I guess is the word I'm looking for. Cody and the Young Bucks self-financing this show. They put this whole thing together. It was really kind of sparked from almost like a dare or a bet, kind of, where somebody asked Dave Meltzer on Twitter, you know, could Ring of Honor fill a building with 10,000 seats? And Meltzer's answer was something to the effect of not anytime soon. And Cody decided to take him up on that challenge and say, you know what? I think you're wrong. And we're going to try to prove you wrong. Well, here we are. And they're going to be at the Sears Center in Chicago, or I guess technically it's Hoffman Estates, and they're going to have 10,000 people in that building or thereabout for the biggest independent show in the history of probably U.S. wrestling. I mean, I can't think of another indie, quote-unquote indie show that has had a crowd or promised a crowd of that size. So this is a historic event, whether you support what they're doing or not, and I'm not sure why you wouldn't. I don't really understand that. But Cody Rhodes did before I get into the car, because I'm going to run the card down, Cody Rhodes did a media call this week to promote All In. And when he was asked about possible future All In events, he answered like this. This was his response. He says, a lot has happened in the last few weeks. A lot of discussions about the future. One thing that is special about this, and I have to be rather cagey in answering, one thing that's special about this group we have is that we have verbally committed to each other. And I don't know what that's ever been done in the history of professional wrestling, where I have verbally committed to the Bucks, Kenny Omega, and Hangman Page. There's this verbal commitment that the next step we take, because it's no secret, our contracts are all up. What happens next? The next step we take, we're going to take it together, and we're going to take it as a family. It could be the dumbest move ever. Wrestling is sort of a shady business, or we can do what my gut tells me, which is the right call. So he's being very vague in that response there. I thought that was a very interesting way for him to answer that question. Poor Marty Scurll, by the way. He mentions Hangman Page and not Marty Scurll. I guess Marty's contract isn't up with theirs then. I guess that's the only takeaway I have from that. But Cody and the Bucks deals are supposedly up at the end of this year. And Kenny Omega's deal with New Japan is up on January 31st. And this is a tough one. You know, the best decision for them, obviously, to make is the one that's going to make the most business sense, right? The Bucks have been pretty open about talking about they have to do what's right for their family. They have kids. They've been kind of running their own thing on the indies and selling their own merch and, you know, DIY now for their entire career. And at some point, it may be time for them to take the money and run. WWE can't afford to pay these guys more than anybody else probably will. You know, just because Sinclair Broadcasting owns Ring of Honor and Sinclair has more money than friggin' God doesn't mean that Ring of Honor's budget is as big as WWE's budget, right? So even Ring of Honor, New Japan, none of them can afford to, in a bidding war, pay as much as WWE is going to be able to get these guys. That's just the fact. And I do think it would be cool to see all of them come in together, maybe even as some sort of invading faction, if WWE actually knew how to do these things, and I don't trust that they do, just based on their track record. It would be cool, though, if they did all come in at once, right? But again, WWE, very hit or miss with these things. You can drop a bar of gold in their lap, and they won't even realize it. They'll think you dropped some copper or zinc or something, right? I mean, they just don't always take advantage of these things. Me personally, I would rather that they all stick together and just do another year with Ring of Honor and New Japan. I really would. I mean, they deserve the Bucks and Omega, that is, and all of them. They really deserve to be part of that Madison Square Garden show in April. To me, it just would not feel right for them to not be part of that show. And also, just selfishly, I said this before, I want Kenny Omega and Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi. I just merged two different wrestlers together. What a wrestler, though, Kenta Ibushi would be. If you fuse the two of them together, Kenta Kobashi and Kota Ibushi. I just picture in my head now Kenta Kobashi doing all of the crazy flips and dives that Kota Ibushi does. That's kind of scary. But I want Omega against Ibushi in a perfect world for that IWGP Championship as one of the main events, if not the main event, of that MSG show. I don't know if it's going to happen. Omega could very easily drop the belt before then, especially if his contract is up. But that's the match that I want. Now, they could give their contracts could expire, and they could give a verbal commitment or sign maybe like a short-term extension if they really wanted to, and they could stick around long enough just to be on that MSG show. And then they can go to WWE. That could happen too. But the thing is, like, Cody, I don't see Cody wanting to go back to WWE. Not right now. Maybe eventually. I just don't see, you know, I could see the Bucks going. I could see Omega going because it's like, we've done all that we can do in Ring of Honor and New Japan, and it's time to work with a whole new batch of people and make that money. Like, I could see that. But Cody, you know, and I haven't talked to him, so I don't know this. I don't know what's going through his mind, but I don't get the sense when I hear him talk and do interviews that he is anxious at all to go back to WWE right now. So, you know, and I would hate to see some go and not others and break the whole thing up. You know, they have their independence, kind of. I mean, I guess they do have contracts. But they have a hell of a lot more independence to do what they want than they would if they were in WWE. Being the Elite is one of the more entertaining things, I think, in wrestling today. You remember what happened when WWE took control of Zack Ryder's YouTube show? What happened to it? It fucking died. That's what happened. Can you imagine WWE taking over Being the Elite? That show would die a death. But, you know, it's easy to think about. Well, what if? What if they went there? You got Bullet Club and The Shield, Bullet Club and New Day. Even if they can't call themselves that, I'm just saying Bullet Club. And it's all very appealing. I think they would do big business with those programs. But I'd like to see them hold out a little bit longer. My gut tells me that's what they're going to do. That they're not all going to make the jump to WWE. They're going to just stick where they are. Or, look, maybe Cody starts his own promotion. I was talking to someone the other day who thought there was a very distinct possibility that might happen. And if this next event here coming up next weekend is well received and it's not a complete cluster and it goes off, totally well, it could very well happen. I could see maybe they get the itch to want to start their own promotion, but there's a lot of headaches involved in running your own promotion. You know, do he and those guys want to do that? Do they want to run a business like that and all the garbage and crap that comes along with it while at the same time they have their in-ring careers to worry about? I don't know. I don't know that they want to do that, but my gut tells me that if they do all stick to this little verbal pact that they have, it ain't going to be in WWE. There will be an all-in zero-hour pre-show airing live and free on WGN America. It starts at 6 p.m. Eastern next Saturday. That will lead directly into the all-in pay-per-view, which you can watch. It's on traditional pay-per-view, but you can also stream it on the Fight TV app for $39.99. That's probably how I'm watching it, through Fight. A lot of the stories and the build-up to these matches have played out on those Being the Elite videos that I mentioned, which in a lot of cases do a much better job of telling stories and stringing these stories together than WWE does on their weekly TV shows. There will be a 15-person over-budget battle royal on that zero-hour pre-show. Some of the names involved include female wrestler Jordynne Grace, who I think may be the only female, at least so far, announced for this match. Billy Gunn was just added to the match as well. Brian Cage, Moose, Rocky Romero, Ethan Page, and Colt Cabana are among the names announced so far. Maybe this is where we get to see CM Punk make an appearance. He could hit Cabana with his new move, the counterclaim, and this distracts Colt and causes him to be eliminated. But according to Cody, the over-budget battle royal is very aptly named, because they are, they being he and the Bucks, they are indeed over-budget for this show. They had a budget in mind for it when they started this whole thing, and they have since crashed right through that. But there's no turning back now. I say go big or go home. By the way, you really do need to check out these videos that Dave Lagana and those guys are putting out on YouTube, chronicling all of the events leading up to this show. And all of the 10 pounds of gold videos on the NWA YouTube channel. They're very well done, very well produced. I really like what they've been doing with them. So if you haven't been checking it out, and I had missed a few, but I think I'm caught up on most of them now, definitely take some time, you know, to go through some of them at least. I think you'll be impressed by what they're putting out. But the winner of this over-budget battle royal will go on to wrestle Jay Lethal on the main card later in the night for the Ring of Honor World title. Now, I say that Bernard the Bear enters the battle royal, wins the battle royal, because Bernard the Bear, for those of you who don't watch any of those videos, you have no idea what I'm talking about. But there is a guy in a bear costume. He is a recurring character on these shows. His name is Bernard. And so I think Bernard will win this battle royal. And later on, he will reveal himself to be Flip Gordon, who is not booked for this show. That's another recurring theme on these videos. Flip Gordon has been trying his damnedest to get booked on this all-in show, and they just will not let him. Mainly Cody. Cody is the one who mainly is against him being booked on the show. And again, this has been a recurring theme for weeks now. They just spoofed, in one of the last videos, they spoofed the Dennis Stamp scenes from Beyond the Mat, where Terry Funk goes to Dennis Stamp. Dennis Stamp, he's since passed away, but he was a wrestler, and he was very upset that he was not booked for this Terry Funk retirement show. Save your laughter, by the way. I know, Terry Funk retirement in 1997. But this was one of the many Terry Funk retirement shows that were planned, and Terry was wrestling Bret Hart. WWF was going to let Bret Hart, who was the champion at the time, wrestle in the main event against Terry Funk on the show. And there's this famous scene where Terry goes and finds Dennis, and Dennis is jumping up and down on a trampoline to stay in shape, and he's like, oh, I want you to be part of the show, I want you to come. And he's like, well, I would, but I'm not booked. I'm not booked, Terry. I'm not booked. In the end, though, he does come to the show, and he's the special referee for the main event. So they were kind of spoofing that whole trampoline scene on one of the recent videos, where one of the Young Bucks goes to find Flip and say, look, we really want you on the show, and, you know, he says, I'm not booked. So anyway, that's how I see that playing out. But, and I floated this idea on Twitter, what I would love to see, and this leads into one of the big stories of the week, is Neville. As a surprise entrant, I'd like to see him win the whole thing and then go on to wrestle Jay Lethal for the Ring of Honor Championship on the main card and win it. And then, of course, you know, we find out that Neville has signed a contract with Ring of Honor and he's their champion now. Maybe he can have one of those deals where he can do ROH and New Japan, because I think Neville in New Japan could also be fun. Some of the, you know, junior heavyweights he can work with over there. But Pro Wrestling Sheet had the story. They had the exclusive this week reporting that Neville is no longer under contract with WWE. Neville has been sort of in purgatory now for months and months and months. I think really all year. It was late last year that he basically took his ball and went home. He wasn't happy, and he was still under contract with the company, but he was doing the Cruiserweight thing on 205 Live. I think he had lost to Enzo Amore, and I guess that was the straw that broke the camel's back. But and we don't know that. We still don't know exactly why he left and what exactly he was so upset about. But you know, we don't know if he's under some sort of non-compete, and if so, for how long. Just because the story came out this week doesn't mean that only as of this week he is no longer under contract. It could be that he is now completely free and clear, and maybe this has been the case for a few months now and the non-compete is up. We just don't know. But it may well not be legally possible for him to be on the show next Saturday. But if he can be, him winning and wrestling Jay Lethal for the title, I think, would be awesome. Cody did tweet something out very randomly last week. He literally just put a tweet out that said, "I miss Neville." So maybe that wasn't so random after all. I don't know exactly what it was that made Neville quit the company, if it really was working with and losing to Enzo Amore, because I heard other stories that said he and Enzo got along great, that they, you know, they were friendly with each other. So I'm only joking when I say that. Maybe it had something to do with it, maybe it didn't. I tend to think that, you know, he probably just was overall unhappy with his position, you know, at the time. It could just be that he felt stifled being relegated to the Cruiserweight division, even though he was champion there for a long time, and they sort of built the division around him after he turned heel. At the end of the day, he still, in WWE, was quote-unquote only a Cruiserweight. And Neville is so much better than that. That's the problem if you're in that division. Great as the matches may be, especially since Triple H took over, if it's not part of the main shows, nobody really pays attention to it, or they don't have time to watch another show. And frankly, even when we saw the Cruiserweights on Raw, people didn't really seem to give much of a shit. But here with Neville, here's a guy who had that, and I keep going back to this match in my mind because it's one of my favorite TV matches in the last decade. I remember that great match he had. It was August of 2015 on Raw for the WWE Championship against Seth Rollins. And for all the people who say, well, it wouldn't be believable for Neville to be pushed at that level, or for Neville to be wrestling for the WWE title. I don't remember what city or town they were in that night, but you go back and watch that match. I'll say this much. I didn't see very many people in the crowd not buying into the idea that Neville might be able to win the championship. They sure seemed into that match. They sure seemed to be standing up in some cases or on the edge of their seat and reacting as though they wanted badly to see this guy win the championship. I didn't see people sitting on their hands. I didn't see people chanting boring. I didn't see people holding up signs that said, "Oh, vanilla midget," and all the other idiotic things I see people online saying. That was a fantastic match. Those two tore the house down. And I'm pretty sure they weren't in Brooklyn or LA or Toronto or any, you know, oh, they're in a smart city. Again, the stupid shit that I see people say online is just mind-numbing. It was a great match, and he was a nose hair away from winning the championship. And the place came unglued. Watch that Red Arrow spot. Watch that Red Arrow near fall, where he almost got the three count. I don't care if he's 5'6" or 7 feet. This guy is too talented to be wasting away as a cruiserweight. So he was frustrated. He took his ball and he went home. It's WWE's loss. If he hits the indie scene, he'll be the hottest free agent out there. And any promotion that can lock this guy down to a contract would be better off for it. But this was a big blunder by WWE. And whether he's all in or he has to take a 90-day vacation first, there has never been a better time to be an independent wrestler, to make your own schedule, call your own shots, make pretty good money by all accounts. Especially if you're a name right out of WWE. I mean, I know he's been on ice for a while because he hasn't been on TV and he's sort of been out of sight, out of mind. But the minute he hits the indie scene, believe me, he's not going to have trouble finding work. And as somebody who came from WWE and there's this perception that, well, he was mistreated, he wasn't used the way that he should have been used, believe me, he'll do very well for himself. He can make a very good living. He could have the freedom and the fun that he probably would not have working for WWE. look, if you're not happy, then why settle? If you're unhappy at your job, unless you need the paycheck, so you kind of stick it out because you got no other options. In a case like his, believe me, he's got options. If he's not happy, then go home. Why should he stay and be miserable? Go somewhere else and make them want you even more. Who's to say he won't be back in WWE in 3 years and be an even bigger name at that point? You can count a whole bunch of guys. Drew McIntyre is one of the more recent ones. Now, I know Drew, you know, he looks the part. I think Drew is going to do, you know, well for himself just by virtue of how he looks. That's just the nature of the business, I guess. But, you know, Drew McIntyre went away. He was a joke. When he left, he was a joke. He was booked as a joke. He went away. He reinvented himself. He came back. He's like a completely different person. And you could find other examples of that as well. Who's to say the same thing won't happen with Neville? Who's to say that Triple H doesn't convince him to sign some sort of special deal to come back, but to come back only as part of that new NXT UK division? They have a new show that they're about to launch. They have this whole new division with Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate and Wolfgang and you know, all these different people that they're going to be doing. Why not bring in Neville as one of the top stars for that brand? Let him wrestle independence, but be part of their new NXT brand over in the UK, you know, working with Triple H, who seemed to do right by Neville when they were in NXT. Then he hit the main roster, and, you know, after a while, not so much. But, you know, Neville and NXT working under Triple H seemed to do pretty well. I wouldn't rule that out either as a possibility. If I'm Triple H, I don't know what his deal is with Vince McMahon and you know, those people, but I'm certainly reaching out and seeing if there's any interest. We got Madison Rayne, Britt Baker, Tessa Blanchard, and Chelsea Green in a four-way, a women's four-way. We have Jay and Mark Briscoe taking on Scorpio Sky and Frankie Kazarian. Joey Janela takes on Hangman Page. Christopher Daniels is wrestling Stephen Amell. Marty Scurll takes on Kazuchika Okada. I'm sure Okada will have his balloons with him. I watched that last episode of Being the Elite, and I loved it when Scurll and Okada, they're walking down the same hallway, and they cross paths with one another, and Okada just turns around, and he does the hand signal to Marty with his hands. He goes, 205. Like he has sentenced Marty Scurll to obscurity on 205 Live if he loses this match. This is a pretty big match, I think a first time ever, too. Kenny Omega one-on-one against Pentagon Jr. Pentagon has been keeping busy. He appeared on two different television shows this week. He wrestled Cage in a last man or machine standing match on Lucha Underground. And the very next night, he wrestled Sammy Callahan on Impact in a Mexican death match. Both very violent matches. That is a common theme of many Pentagon matches. And now, the rumor is that he and his brother Phoenix may be on their way to WWE. This terrifies me. Can you imagine Vince McMahon getting his hands on Pentagon? Changing his name to Hexagon and forcing him to take his mask off or some stupid shit like that. Like, the problem with Pentagon going to WWE is that he is best known for having very violent, very bloody matches. Which is not to say that he can't have a regular match. I'm just saying that's sort of his calling card, right? A lot of the matches I've seen him in recently are like that. Match he had with, you know, Sammy Callahan before their Mexican death match. I think was it Slammiversary? So he's known for having those violent, bloody brawls. He will not be allowed to have violent, bloody matches in WWE. You know, the House of Glory show that I worked last week had a main event that was more extreme than any match on the Extreme Rules card that WWE did this year. I just don't think it's a good fit. I really don't. I'm very worried about this, and I'm a big Pentagon fan, but if some guys are just not meant to go to certain places. Now, Phoenix, I think, would do well there. I feel like he would do well. He would do well on 205 Live, but 205 Live, you know, good as it may be, is like being in prison and getting sent to solitary confinement, right? Nobody's going to see you or hear from you ever again. That crowd, or what there was of that crowd at SummerSlam during the kickoff show, they didn't care one bit about that cruiserweight match between Drew Gulak and Cedric Alexander. So, yes, 205 Live, he would certainly, you know, bring some excitement to that show, but I think Phoenix would be best suited to go to NXT. NXT, I feel like, needs a good luchador. That's the one thing missing from the NXT roster. Now, they already have Prince Puma, I guess, but they need a really talented luchador there, like a really dynamic performer, and Phoenix would check that box. I'm sorry to say, no offense to Raul Mendoza, he's not exactly lighting the world on fire down there right now. But, you know, get Phoenix in there with Ricochet, get Phoenix in there with Adam Cole and Velveteen Dream and those guys, and I think that could be a lot of fun. I think he would do well. Kota Ibushi is going to team up with the Young Bucks to take on Rey Mysterio, who should be back in WWE any day now. They're probably just waiting to make the announcement until after this show is over. So Mysterio is going to be teaming with the aforementioned Phoenix and Bandido in a six-man tag. And Cody challenges Nick Aldis for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. I can think of no better exposure for that title than Cody winning it at All In. Obviously, there's a story to be told about his father's history with the old NWA title, which is not, this is not the same title. I mean, I think people understand the NWA doesn't have the same cachet that it once did, although, you know, Billy Corgan and Lagana, they're doing their damnedest to try to make that title feel really special. The one thing that you can't say is that there's not effort being put in to try to make that championship feel special like it once did. And I like the whole idea of the traveling champion, like I said before, and they've been doing that with Nick Aldis. This is going to be the biggest exposure yet for that NWA title since it was resurrected. And I think Cody winning it would kind of elevate it even more in terms of you know, its profile and the exposure that it gets. I don't know what they're going to do, but I am intrigued to see if they do pull the trigger on that title change there. And also Nick Aldis, you know, this is a big stage for him. When I think of Magnus and all the matches he had in TNA, there are none that jump out at me as being, oh, do you remember that one special Magnus match? I don't think he really ever had that kind of match in TNA. And so here's an opportunity for him to go out and try to steal the show and have the best match of his career and the most memorable match of his career. So I think it's got check time for him on this show too. Now there is always the possibility of CM Punk making a surprise return. Cody said in an interview that Matt Jackson, I think it was, one of the Young Bucks, did reach out to Punk and made a pitch to him to be on the show or be at the show, even just for an appearance. But it sounds like it's a no-go. That was the impression that Cody had. But then again, that's exactly the sort of thing I would expect him to say. I wouldn't expect him to say, hey, you know, there's an 80-20 chance that Punk will actually be there. So that doesn't really mean anything. Punk is doing a signing this Friday. He is part of All In Weekend. He is doing a signing at the Pro Wrestling Tee Store in Chicago on Friday. It is sold out. If Punk does appear, and I honestly, I don't know if he will. I really feel it's 50-50 if he does or not. If you made me make a decision one way or the other, or I say no, I would say he won't be making an appearance. But if he does, I would not expect him to wrestle. I think it would just be an appearance. And even with all of the bad press that came out of the Cabana lawsuit and how bad it made Punk look when you read the text messages and the emails and all of that, I still don't expect any less than a monster reaction for Punk if he does show up. They are in Chicago. You got to remember that. It's been over 4 years since he has made any sort of wrestling appearance. It would be a real feather in the cap of Cody and the Bucks if they could get him, but they don't need him. Same with Chris Jericho. I see some you know, rumors about that as well. Will Jericho make an appearance? Is he going, you know, even though it's in the U.S., and he has said before that he doesn't want to do that to Vince McMahon, and New Japan is different because it's overseas. You listen to Jericho in his podcast lately. He seems to be softening his stance a little bit. He's more open to doing stuff with Impact because, you know, Don Callis is a good friend of his. He's more open to doing stuff with ROH. You know, maybe he'll be at the MSG show next year. I don't see him at All In, but is it possible? Sure, anything's possible. Do they need him? No, they don't. And to me, that's also what's been kind of impressive about this, is that at the beginning of this, I would have thought this show is going to be a total flop unless they get at least that one big name from the outside that they could sort of build everything around. CM Punk would have been that name. And here we are now, a week out, less than a week out from this show. They have some big names on the show, don't get me wrong. You've got Kenny Omega wrestling and Pentagon wrestling and Okada wrestling. And so to the audience that they're going after with the show, those are big names. But they're not building the show around Okada. They're not building the show around Kenny Omega. This has been a collaborative effort here. And they haven't had to go out and just get that one big name from WWE that everybody knows just to sell tickets or just to sort of build the whole show around. They don't need Punk. They don't need Jericho. It would help them. But they did this on their own. And I think there's something to be said for that. I think whatever you may think of those guys and how many people are actually going to be in the building, we'll see. I give them a lot of credit for coming this far, and you know they've built something up here. We'll see how it does. In terms of pay-per-view buys, I mean, it's impossible to even make a prediction because nothing like this has ever really been done before. They've not tried anything like this before. I hope it does well. I hope it does well, and it leads to more events like this in the future. Because to me, this is what makes wrestling fun and exciting. Any sort of options like this that get people excited outside of WWE to me is a good thing. And I will have a full review of the show on the podcast next weekend. So if you're wondering about that, yes, I will watch the show. I will talk about it. Since it's on Saturday night, I'll probably just wait until the podcast on Sunday morning to record my thoughts. I don't know that there'll be anything going up on YouTube that night. But I will absolutely review All In on episode 562 next weekend. There was a report this week attributed to Barn Burner's Fired Up podcast, which is not exactly a source of news that I'm ready to pin all of my hopes on. But they claim that WWE has approached AJ Lee about a return to the Evolution pay-per-view in October, and that AJ is at least open to the idea. She is open to the idea of making an appearance of some kind at Evolution. Talks are ongoing. I do think it would have been completely ridiculous for WWE to not extend an invitation to her. And others, too. And I've heard nothing about Victoria or Melina. I know Melina has a lot of fans. They've been persona non grata with this company for whatever reason. And the Victoria thing still just puzzles me. I'm less concerned about seeing Melina wrestle, but AJ was a very big part of their programming for a very long time, and she had to at least be invited to be part of this event. If this is true, and if she takes them up on their offer, I don't know if it would be for just an appearance. I don't know if she would be wrestling an actual match. If it's a match, you know, it's a shame that they've already set up some of these matches, and I'm not overly impressed, but, you know, if it's a match, I would rather see her against Nikki Bella than I would Ronda Rousey against Nikki Bella, which according to Meltzer is the current planned main event for that Evolution pay-per-view. Ronda Rousey against Nikki Bella. I don't know about you, that match does not excite me at all. Not one bit. Of all the opponents that I've dreamed up for Ronda Rousey since she came to WWE, the words Nikki Bella have not left my lips. And then I read this. And I guess, you know, the idea there is that, you know, the two mainstream female stars, because Nikki Bella now would be considered mainstream. They have a couple of hit reality shows. They have like a clothing line or something. I don't know. But, you know, the Bellas are big stars now. And Ronda obviously is a big name. And so that's the rumor. That's the latest rumor. But like I said, AJ and Nikki Bella, there's a real history there that I think people remember and that they could play off of. And maybe they're the best of friends. I don't know that there's any heat between the two of them, but you could certainly play it up. Everybody remembers the promo that AJ cut on all of those Total Divas women on Raw that one time when the Bellas were being extraordinarily annoying and talking over everybody, or trying to. But AJ dropped the bomb on that entire division. That's still a very talked about, well-remembered promo. All you need to do is go back to that period of time and draw on that, and I think AJ against Nikki has a history there that would be fun to play off of. And it would keep Nikki out of the main event. But if the format is the stars of today against the stars of yesteryear, you could always do AJ against Ember Moon, AJ against Bayley. If it were me, and I know it's already too late for this, but if I were booking this card, I'd have booked Sasha Banks against Trish Stratus not Trish against Alexa Bliss. I would have done Sasha and Trish to play off their brief interaction in the Women's Royal Rumble match. And I'd have done AJ against Alexa Bliss. So I just named three or four different people that, you know, AJ Lee could go in there and I think have a good match with, or have some history to play off of in the case of Nikki Bella. But if it's going to be Nikki and Ronda, and okay, well, what do you do with AJ? I would have done AJ and Bliss. I think that's a better matchup than Trish and Alexa. Two women who could hold their own on the microphone, right, in AJ and Alexa. About the same size. It's not a mismatch. Like, I wouldn't do AJ, for example, against Nia Jax. I wouldn't do AJ and even against Asuka, because I just don't think that would necessarily be a great matchup of styles there. AJ and Alexa, Sasha and Trish, those are two gimmies right there, where they should have been. You know, but again, Ronda and Nikki is one of the rumored matches for this event. You would have to think Charlotte and Becky Lynch, their feud is going to continue. They'll have some sort of championship match on that show. There is going to be an NXT women's title match as well. And the finals of the Mae Young Classic. Would not be at all shocked to see a match added between Brie Bella and Maryse. So that's another possibility for that Evolution show. Tickets went on sale for that show this week at the Nassau Coliseum, and the show is either sold out or nearly sold out. So people seem to be buying into this, you know, being a historical event. They want to be part of it. It's the first one. I will be watching from the comfort of my own home so that I can get a review up right after. That's what I do for you people. It's a lot harder if you go to these shows to, you know, turn a review around quickly enough. So just a lot easier to hang back and watch the show at home and not have to deal with Long Island traffic. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Brooklyn, New York. Four straight days in Brooklyn for NXT, SummerSlam, Raw, and SmackDown. I think Brooklyn has had their fill of WWE. Twitter poll. Over 3,100 votes in the Raw poll this week. 57% thumbs up, 43% thumbs down. I'm glad 57% of you enjoyed this, but I thought this was a bad show until the final 20 minutes. 20 minutes out of 3 hours is not a good show. I'm sorry. They saved their big angle for the very end, but otherwise, there was nothing of any real note. No new faces, no new call-ups from NXT, which you get sometimes after SummerSlam. No major angles to get you excited really about anything aside from what happened at the very end of the show. We had an in-ring promo with Triple H hyping this supposed last match ever until the next one against The Undertaker October 6th at their Super Showdown pay-per-view in Australia. A match that's still 6 weeks away. All the while, he's talking about Undertaker as though he vanished after WrestleMania 33 and has never been heard from again. It's like the match with John Cena never happened. The match with Rusev in Saudi Arabia was but a dream sequence. And the other half of his promo was talking about their end of an era match at WrestleMania and how there will never be another era like theirs ever again. You can say that again. I wouldn't exactly be drawing people's attention to that fact, but that is true. That is not a false statement. Brock Lesnar was not on this show, even though he was advertised locally for it. He flew home right after SummerSlam. but Paul Heyman was there. He told Kurt Angle, hey, Brock would like to invoke his rematch clause for the Universal title for the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. And Kurt said, yes, Brock is entitled to his rematch, but his contract does not specify when he is entitled to said rematch, and so he's going to stall for as long as humanly possible. So basically the answer was no. And that was the last that we saw or heard from Paul Heyman for the rest of the night. We had Bobby Lashley and Baron Corbin going 12 minutes. 12 minutes. A test pattern would have been more exciting than the match that these two had. They had a women's segment with Stephanie McMahon and Ronda Rousey here. This just felt repetitive. I mean, we've seen Ronda break her arm before, which she did again here, or she tried to anyway. We had the entire Raw women's division surrounding the ring. Ronda put over Natty, and she put over Sasha, which was hilarious because Sasha and Bayley are on the outside. And Ronda looks at Sasha, and she's putting her over for that classic match that the two of them had in the Barclays Center 3 years ago. And Sasha just has this look on her face like, yeah, I know. Like, wow. Boy, talk about, like, what we were doing then and what we did now. They weren't even on the card this year, so I can imagine what was going through her mind. And I'm going to talk about Sasha later because she was on Peter Rosenberg's has a show and did a sit-down interview with her, and she had some very interesting comments about Alexa Bliss, and somebody asked me a mailbag question about it, so I'm going to answer that later. But, yeah, she's putting over all these people, and so she leaves Stephanie laying. They all celebrate with her, including the Bellas. The Bellas are in there, right, celebrating with Ronda Rousey. No interaction with Ronda, really, but they were out there. It was one of these, like, rah-rah deals where Ronda's out there trying to ingratiate herself to all of the other women, and maybe it's leading to one of them growing jealous of her, and all of the attention that she's been getting. Maybe that's where the Bella thing comes from. We'll see, you know, how things play out. But as a segment, I just thought, ugh, this is not what I want to see Ronda Rousey doing. And the whole Ronda Stephanie thing, it just feels like been there, done that. Do we really need to revisit this again? So as a result of what happened to Stephanie, who held Kurt Angle responsible for Ronda Rousey hurting her, she said, look, Kurt, I could see it in your face. You feel the pressure of the job. It's getting to you. I think you need a little vacation. So she didn't fire him, but she basically did. She said, temporarily, I think you need to go away on vacation. And in the meantime, Constable Baron Corbin is now the interim acting general manager of Monday Night Raw. So we go from a babyface GM to a heel GM. And you know how much I love all these heel authority figures. Oh, I can't get enough of them. So now we have another one. So Kurt Angle is no longer the GM. And, you know, you look back on his job performance, and I thought it was sort of the tale of two worlds here. On the one hand, I thought it was just the perfect role for him, because it kept him involved in the show and the product, but it didn't require him to kill himself in the ring. We've seen him wrestle a few times, right? He became an honorary member of the Shield when Roman got sick last year, and you know he was in the Battle Royal, right, in Saudi Arabia. He was in the tag team match at WrestleMania, the mixed tag. So they've picked their spots with Kurt, and I think that's the best way to use him if he is going to be in the ring. Pick your spots, save him for big matches or big special appearances. But on the other hand, you know, he comes out and, you know, he does tend to trip over his own words and sometimes, you know, and I think it's sort of in a way where you laugh at it, but it's like, well, that's just Kurt being Kurt. You know what I mean? Like, he's been good. I think he's been good in the role, and it's been refreshing to have a babyface general manager for a change, because we've had way more heels than babyfaces in that role. So on the whole, I think it's been a net positive having him as the GM, even though he hasn't exactly been their best GM figure. Sometimes I watch him in these backstage segments, and it's just cringe-inducing. His acting in these segments is not exactly up to par, although I won't put all the blame on him for that. Some of it, yes, but some of it also is just the frickin' awful dialogue that they give him. He does the best with it that he can, I guess. But the rumor as to why he was taken off TV is very interesting. The rumor is that he was taken off television here, not because he's hurt or because he's literally going on a family vacation with his kids or something. He is training for an in-ring comeback. And again, we'll see if it gets reported elsewhere. That's sort of the story floating around. But that's the story, is that he is going to be training for more of a full-time in-ring comeback, whether it's actually full-time or just he's going to be wrestling a lot more going forward when he comes back than he was before. And that worries me, because obviously you worry about the guy's health. He's got a history of neck problems, knee issues. I think his knees, if anything, are probably more of the issue now than his neck. But I watch Kurt at the greatest Royal Rumble, and I watch Kurt in that match with the Shield, and you know, I think people who still expect to see the Kurt Angle of old have been very disappointed. I expected nothing from him, because you hear these stories about Kurt, you would think the guy's about to fall apart. I thought he held, you know, he accounted for himself pretty well. in that TLC six-man last year and in the WrestleMania match, right? I thought he did fine. Like I said, when you pick your spots with him, he's fine, but he's obviously a lot older. He's a lot slower. He's got knee issues. Even just watching him try to stand up straight, his posture, it's almost painful to watch this guy. But I hear full-time return, and I immediately get scared to death for this guy. I think Kurt Angle coming back full-time would be a terrible idea, absolutely horrendous idea. Him training for a comeback to do a few matches per year, though, that's fine. As long as people don't expect to see the Kurt Angle of 5 or 10 or 15 years ago, because that Kurt Angle is long gone. But you think to yourself, well, if he did come back, who could he work a program with? And Jason Jordan, unfortunately, his son, his career may be over. I mean, that to me is one of the more shocking stories I've read about recently, is that Jason Jordan had some neck problems, right? He had neck surgery that I remember reading was supposedly not overly serious. It wasn't like spinal fusion surgery. He didn't have a broken neck. This was just surgery to repair some nerve issues, and he would be back in a few months, right? That was the story at the time. And then he had the surgery, and he had rehab, and he was recovering. And just a few months ago, we heard, well, Jason Jordan has been cleared to come back. They're just waiting for a storyline reason to bring him in. He's backstage at all the TV shows. Then apparently he had some sort of setback. And now the story is, he may not be able to come back at all. His career could very well be in jeopardy. And Jason Jordan's a young guy. I mean, he's got to be, he's in his early 20s. And to think that his career, they're talking about his career potentially being in jeopardy, that's some scary shit right there. Now, when it comes to nerve issues and the neck, you don't want to fuck around with that. So I don't know exactly what his physical status is at this point, but they've been showing him the ropes behind the scenes on the production end. I don't know if he's been sort of like an agent. He's been agenting some matches, I think, is what I had read. I think I saw that in the Observer. I mean, they seem to be preparing him for possible roles in the company that don't require him to actually wrestle, and that's pretty scary stuff there. So I think the prospects of a Kurt Angle-Jason Jordan match, which I at one point thought they might do at WrestleMania this year, that's completely out the window for the time being. So him working with Jordan doesn't look like it's going to happen. So we'll put him on the side. As much as this match doesn't excite me, it would make sense storyline-wise if Kurt comes back eventually and has a match or a program with Baron Corbin, because Corbin was his sidekick, and everything, you know, Kurt did, Corbin had a second guess, and he would run to Stephanie McMahon and rat him out like a little bitch. So to do something with Angle and Corbin would make sense, although, like I said, that match, not overly excited about that. Kevin Owens, I think, would be a fine person to work with Kurt Angle. I think that they could probably put something together that's fairly entertaining, and Kevin's had his issues in the past with Kurt. But the name I keep coming back to, and some people will scoff, but I don't care. The name that I come back to is Chad Gable. Where is Chad Gable? I'm asking you, where is Chad Gable? Because I haven't seen him. Maybe he's been hanging out on Main Event. Probably has been, but I have not seen Chad Gable on Raw in forever. The last time I can remember Chad Gable on Raw was many, many weeks ago when he was losing to Jinder Mahal. I think he may have gotten a fluke win over Jinder, and then Jinder beat him, but other than that, he's done absolutely nothing. And now if Jason Jordan's not coming back, you remove any possibility of doing an American Alpha reunion, Chad Gable is left out in the cold. I don't quite understand why he was even moved over from SmackDown, if that's the case. He had the thing going with Shelton Benjamin. Now Shelton's not doing anything on that show either. It's like, we have to come up with an idea. Oh, I know, we'll come up with an idea to make things worse for these two guys. Yeah, that'll do it. Chad Gable is being completely wasted. Chad Gable is a great wrestler. He has an Olympic background of his own, which is one of those things he shares in common with Kurt Angle, besides the fact that I think he legitimately looks like he could be Kurt's son. So, of course, they went with the other guy as his son. But I look at this and I say, if Kurt Angle is really going to come back, I think the best use of Kurt Angle is for him to work with one of the younger guys. I don't need to see Kurt Angle against Triple H. I don't need to see Kurt Angle against The Undertaker. I don't need to see Kurt Angle against Chris Jericho. Been there, done that. There is no big name match with Kurt Angle like that with another big star from that era that I look at and say, oh, that match needs to happen. If you're going to use Kurt, use him as a way to elevate some of the guys that really could use his help. And how you get to that point, there's a lot of different ways you could potentially get to that point. I think it could be as simple as Gable's down in the dumps. We see him backstage sitting in catering or sitting in the hallway, twiddling his thumbs, all depressed because he's got no direction. He's been losing matches. He hasn't been on TV. He's second-guessing himself. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this anymore. And Kurt Angle could be the one to kind of come in and say, look, you're a friggin' Olympian. You and I share something that very few other people on this roster have. I'm going to take you under my wing. I'm going to make you my personal pet project here. And you just sort of go from there. And Kurt could take him under his wing and can mentor him and can sort of almost like an injured bird, you know, nurse him back to health. And you just sort of go from there. You know, whether Gable starts winning matches, maybe he gets a chip on his shoulder and it ends up eventually with him against Kurt. Whether he turns on Kurt or whether it's just a friendly competition with Kurt. But Chad Gable is one of those talents, and there have been many, who are just, I mean, literally hanging back in catering, doing not much of anything. Just waiting around for an opportunity. Or maybe in some cases they're just waiting to get cut. I don't know what goes through some of their minds. It's got to be incredibly frustrating for them. Because you know they want to be out there working, just like everybody else. And because Gable is small, he's not going to get the same opportunities that a Baron Corbin would get. And I saw in this guy charisma, real-life charisma in NXT. So I don't want to hear, well, the guy's got no personality, he's got no charisma, he can't talk. Bullshit. Go back and watch some of those segments that he was doing in NXT. I used to say that he reminded me of Kurt Angle, not just because they both were Olympians, but when Kurt came into the company, what did we get at the beginning there? We got goofy Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle was a serious Olympian. Kurt Angle was entertaining as all shit in the year 2000 with all of the funny stuff that they had him doing. He got to show off a side of his personality that I'm sure people didn't know existed. And that got him over as a heel. Chad Gable had that same thing in NXT. Chad Gable, I thought, was very entertaining and could be very funny if given the opportunity. Why not bring some of that out? Why not use Kurt to help get this guy over to the level that Kurt himself was able to get to? I don't know that Chad Gable could be a world champion like Kurt Angle was working for Vince McMahon. He doesn't have to be. All you need to do is just tap into the talent that the guy has and do something with him. Try to make some money off this guy. To do nothing with him, to me, just doesn't make any sense. I don't want him to end up as one of these NXT stories, called up to the main roster, didn't do anything with him, creative had nothing for him, too small, too this, too that. Oh, he sneezed in front of Vince McMahon, that's the end of him. I would use Kurt Angle to help elevate Chad Gable. That's what I would do. Now, a lot of people may not like hearing this, but I thought what WWE did with Roman Reigns last Monday was incredibly smart. And if their goal is to lessen the backlash and get the crowds to react more favorably when he's in the ring, at least for one night anyway, in Brooklyn, in the Lion's Den, it worked. Now, I'm not saying he didn't get booed out of the building when he first came out, because he did. And you're not going to get the crowds to stop booing him. That's just not going to happen. What I'm saying, though, is what you don't want, I'm sure if you're WWE, what you don't want are fans to just hijack all of his matches and to, you know, divert attention from what's going on in the ring and to just constantly rain boos down upon him from the moment he walks out to the moment he walks to the back. In different cities, you're going to get different reactions, right? But I'm sure that they're coming up with some sort of battle plan here, because they just do what they do best. And what WWE does best, they fight against the fans. They fight against the current, you know, the wave is going in this direction. No, we want to go this way. And so we'll fight against the wave. And they do this all the time. They're doing it with Becky Lynch, to some degree, right now on SmackDown. So put yourself in WWE's shoes for a second here. You've made your mind up. You're not turning this guy heel. He sells a lot of merch. He's our guy. We've invested too much time into trying to get him over as the top babyface. He is what he is. Okay, now they finally put the championship on him. Vince got what he wanted. What do you do now? You've got to have a game plan. You can't expect this guy to just go out there every week and the people are just going to warm to him and they're going to stop booing and be cheering everything he does and says, because that's just not going to happen. So what did they do at the beginning of the show on Monday? Yes, he came out and he got booed, but the first thing he does, he talks about how, unlike Brock Lesnar, I'm going to be a fighting champion. I'm going to defend my title. And the very first person I'm going to defend my title against is Finn Balor, a fan favorite who the fans agree never did get his rightful rematch for the championship. He got hurt, he had to give it up, and he never really formally got the rematch that he should have gotten. That's the first thing Roman Reigns has said in forever where the fans erupted into cheers. They actually cheered when he announced Finn Balor as being his opponent. They roared with approval. Even if, in this backwards logic here, even if it was only because they wanted to see Balor beat him and take the championship. But booking that match on that night in that city was smart. You don't have to like what they're doing with Roman Reigns, but it was smart. And it helped make for an excellent main event. I mean, it is pretty stupid that Balor had to call in the Demon, I think, in order to beat Baron Corbin, of all people, at SummerSlam. Yet, when he is gifted a championship match that he's been waiting 2 years for the very next night, that apparently is not enough to get the Demon to come back out. But that little fact aside, this was a pretty exciting match because the crowd badly wanted to see Balor win that championship. So they were hanging on to every near fall. There were no boring chants, there were no waves, there were no beach balls, at least that I could see. They were invested in the match. It was smart. And then came the finish. Roman Reigns is setting up for the spear. When Braun Strowman's music hits, he marches down to the ring. He's got his Money in the Bank briefcase. This distracts Roman Reigns. This allows Finn Balor to hit a sling blade and a drop kick. Roman, though, rolls out of the way. When Balor goes for the coup de grace, he hits the spear and gets the pin. Strowman immediately gets into the ring. So much for not wanting to cash in like a coward. I mean, I get the fact that he had told Roman he was planning to cash in, but still, the guy just got done wrestling a 20-minute match and can barely have a second to catch his breath. In comes Braun Strowman. And he boots Roman in the gut. Place goes nuts. He hands the briefcase over to the referee. People are just losing their shit for this. And before the bell can ring, we hear the Shield's theme song. And not Roman's theme song, by the way. This was the original Shield theme. They play the Shield music, and out come Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose dressed in their old Shield Riot gear, or at least Rollins was. I think Ambrose was just wearing a black shirt. But the Barclays Center went nuts for this. A, because they like the Shield. I mean, we don't have to really think too hard about this. They just like the Shield. And B, because they didn't see it coming. It is very rare that WWE pulls something off like this without anybody knowing about it, or at least somebody pitching the idea, hey, this might happen. I don't know about you, but I certainly didn't see any reputable people talking about the Shield being reunited the next night as being any sort of realistic possibility. The thought never even crossed my mind. And, you know, they all come out and they attack Braun Strowman. There were some boos when they initially attacked Strowman, but nothing overwhelming. It's not like, oh my God, they're booing the Shield, they're heels now. No, they were, for the most part, they were cheering the Shield like crazy. They were cheering them like babyfaces. Braun fought back, but Roman speared him on the outside, and they gave him the old triple power bomb through the announce desk to end the show, and they did the whole Shield fist pump. Now, I see a lot of hate for this, mainly because, you know, people are very upset that they only did this to get Roman Reigns cheered. How can you not see this? This is disgusting. They're only doing it for Roman. First of all, we don't know yet that there is not some other reason for this as well. Like, for example, what I'm hoping for, which is that Dean Ambrose is eventually going to turn on both Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns. Instead of him just turning on Seth, he could turn on both of them. I'm hopeful that it will happen. But yes, you are absolutely right. Make no mistake about it. WWE has once again built a shield, just as they did last fall. They have built a shield to protect Roman Reigns. That is what they did here. That is the main reason they are doing this. And you know what? it just might work. I mean, Reigns is their champion now. He's their chosen one, whether you or I like it or not, that's the way it is. So if you're WWE, you've got to come up with creative ways to manipulate the crowd and get the desired reaction that you're looking for when this guy is out there. He's never going to be fully embraced by everybody. That just is not going to happen. But I'll tell you this much, Roman Reigns in his history has never been more over in his career with these crowds than when he has been with the Shield, when he has been with his Shield buddies. They know that. They know that reuniting the Shield is like catnip for these crowds. And no, this doesn't make them heels for all those who I've seen asking that question. They would not turn Reigns and Rollins and Ambrose all at the same time, or at least two out of the three. I guess they were already booing Reigns. But they're not turning Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose heel at the same time here. I mean, I know they got Braun, but they don't have that many baby faces. That would be very stupid for them to do that. I didn't see this as a heel turn at all. I don't know why people would really think that this is what WWE had in mind with this. And it does make sense storyline-wise, too, in this way. I'll help explain this, since Michael Cole was too preoccupied with telling us that we were watching a Raw moment. This is a moment, people. That's what they love to do now. Instead of just letting the moments play out, they have to tell us, because we're too fucking stupid to realize that what we're seeing is, hey, this is pretty cool. Oh, it's a moment. So while he was busy telling us this is a Raw moment, and oh my, and the big dog, and all the other garbage that they had feeding him on Monday night, whatever other verbal erection he was having, I'll do his job for him. Let me explain this. Why was the Shield formed in the first place all those years ago? Storyline-wise, what was the explanation that they gave for why they came together as a unit, right? To fight against injustice, right? They reunited last year, and it ended, not because someone turned on someone or they had a falling out. It ended because of injury. Well, now Dean Ambrose is all healed up, and they see their brother is about to have his title stripped away from him after this long, grueling battle that he just had with Finn Balor. It's not right. In their eyes, this is an injustice. They're doing wrong by him. They're sticking up for their brother in arms because that's just what they do. The Shield is always together. We may just not see it on TV until something happens where they need to sort of back each other up, but that's really all the explanation storyline-wise, and we'll see if they do this tomorrow night, but that really storyline-wise is the only explanation that you need to give for what we saw last week. I am hopeful that this is not just a case where, you know, Rollins and Ambrose are going to be weakened because they're just going to be lackeys for Roman Reigns. I don't think that's the case here, and if that's what happens, then boy, I'll have a lot to say about that. I don't see them being lackeys for Roman Reigns. I don't think that's the way they would position them, and I hope not, because Ambrose is very popular, but Rollins, again, you know, you could have gone with Rollins instead of Reigns in that role, and I think people would have accepted him a lot more than Roman. I don't want to see them squander all that great goodwill that Rollins has, you know, built up with the audience now for much of this year. But I am hopeful that whether it takes a month, whether it takes 3 months or 6 months, in the end, Dean Ambrose is going to be the one who makes the turn. Now, Braun Strowman has since challenged Roman Reigns for the Universal title tomorrow night on Raw. He has called his shot. He has threatened to cash in Money in the Bank because all monsters issue their challenges on Twitter, I guess. But this is what he said. He said, "I don't need to surprise you to cash in Money in the Bank. I promise to do it face to face. Face me in the middle of your yard on Raw. And if you're really a man, you will come alone." The AT&T Center in San Antonio, which is hosting the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view next month, has spoiled some of the matches for that show on their website, including the main event, which is listed as Roman Reigns defending his Universal Championship against Braun Strowman. So, I would think that the new GM here, Baron Corbin, probably nixes the match tomorrow night before it has a chance to happen, before the bell rings, and they end up saving, and for what reason? Because he's a heel, I don't know, but he probably has something to do with the match not happening, and they end up saving it for the pay-per-view, would be my guess as to what happens. The website also, by the way, is advertising Ronda Rousey against Alexa Bliss, again, for the Raw Women's title. Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose against Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. So hopefully that puts to bed this notion of the Shield suddenly being heels. And Jeff Hardy against Randy Orton is also being advertised. WWE's already announced Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella against Miz and Maryse, which I'll talk about in a second. And AJ Styles against Samoa Joe for the WWE Championship is confirmed, although it is not listed as a Hell in a Cell match, which is a big mistake, because of all the matches on that card, if there's going to be a Hell in a Cell match, I guess it may end up being Roman and Braun, but it should also be AJ and Joe. That's the sort of rivalry I think that Hell in a Cell really was created for. So now that we have the Shield back together, it got me thinking, and I know some of you have had the same idea or similar ideas. This is the one that I kind of like, to be honest with you, is what if we got a little Wyatt family reunion going with Bray and Luke Harper being brought in as Braun Strowman's backup. And I know Braun is he's a monster and he can handle himself pretty well. But, you know, the way I look at it is getting triple power bombed and triple teamed every single week is going to get old real quick for this guy. And so he's got to, you know, he's going to have to at some point have to just bring in somebody to sort of back him up here. And it just so happens that Bray Wyatt now suddenly finds himself without a tag team partner. Matt Hardy is winding down, it seems like, his in-ring career. His wife, Rebby, just did an interview saying that his contract is up in March. And he's got to think about, you know, his career moving forward. And he's had a lot of physical issues. He's very beat up. He's hurting. He's very beat up. I think he even mentioned recently that his spine and his pelvis? Something is fusing together. I mean, he's got a lot of issues, Matt does, that he's dealing with at the moment. And I mentioned before, Jason Jordan, whose career is sort of up in the air right now, he's been doing some stuff behind the scenes. They've been showing him the ropes about how this works and how that works, and they've been doing the same thing with Matt. Matt also has been, I don't know if he's been agenting or they've been showing him the ropes backstage as a producer. So Bray has no partner and has no program. He has nothing. And neither does Luke Harper. After Eric Rowan went down with a bicep tear, he just had surgery. That's probably a good 6 to 9 month layoff for him. So the Bludgeon Brothers are on ice. Now, Harper's on SmackDown, so you'd have to figure out a way to get him on Raw. But Harper, much like Chad Gable and a lot of these other guys, deserves better than just waiting around and doing nothing. You know, in the case of Harper, he shouldn't just be waiting around for 6 months for Rowan to get better and to come back. Now, my only concern here, if they were to do this, would be making sure that Braun has to firmly be established here as the key player here. Not Bray Wyatt. It has to be Braun. Braun should not be a background player to anyone. Like he was a couple of years ago when he was first part of the Wyatt family. But even if only temporarily, maybe to build to some kind of Survivor Series match, or just some kind of six-man tag, rekindling the Shield and the Wyatts, with Braun's team winning out in the end, maybe that's when Dean Ambrose turns on his brothers, right, at the end of all this. I think that could be a fun story to tell. You know, and let the fans decide who the faces are and who the heels are. Because in this case, they're going to cheer for whoever they're going to cheer for. Maybe they cheer for both. But that then sets up two opponents for our old friend here, Don't Drop the Soap Ambrose, once he does turn, depending on which title they want him to go after. I say he goes through Seth first, not necessarily for the IC title, but he has to go through Seth first. He beats him, and in the end, it's heel Ambrose challenging Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship. But I think the Wyatts and the Shield, even if just temporarily rekindling that feud again and having some six-mans, and that way Braun at least has somebody backing him up, because like I said, three-on-one can only last for so long. I like that idea a lot. And it just so happens, time-wise, that Bray lost his partner, Harper lost his partner. The timing couldn't be better for this. Let's shift over to SmackDown. Here for a few minutes, we had over 2,100 votes in our SmackDown poll this week. 82% thumbs up, only 18% thumbs down. So an overwhelmingly positive response to SmackDown. Miz and Maryse opened the show with what I thought was a great segment. I am so happy to see Maryse back with The Miz. They're just, I think, just a great combo together on TV. I was very disappointed when I found out that she was pregnant and she was going to, you know, be off TV for a while. So she's back, and they mocked Daniel Bryan's retirement speech. Miz acted all choked up as he talked about his own retirement. He says, "I'm retiring." Everyone cheered. He said, "From ever wrestling Daniel Bryan again." And everybody booed. Bryan comes out. He's in the aisle. He's got a mic. He's there to respond. Maryse is telling him, "Why don't you just go ahead and change your name to Daniel Bella?" And that then led to Brie Mode playing. And yes, I did have horrible flashbacks to that MRI machine. Brie comes running down to the ring, like the Ultimate Warrior here. She goes right past Bryan, and she attacks The Miz. She starts raining blows down on The Miz. And Bryan gets in the ring and clotheslines him out of the ring. Place went nuts for this. And I actually thought this was great. Brie has been, you know, she's played the role of the supportive wife when we've seen her on TV. Maryse screwed her husband at SummerSlam. And I should probably rephrase that, but you get my point. I think that a mixed tag, which is what they've announced, at Hell in a Cell, is the right match to do. And I think part of the reason why it's the right match to do, and I don't have any problem with it, is that it's too soon, I think, to come back with another Bryan Miz singles match, because they've already announced a singles match for the Australian pay-per-view in October. It's going to be Bryan one-on-one October 6th against The Miz, with the added stipulation that the winner earns a future WWE Championship opportunity, which is very interesting. We could still get that WWE title match at WrestleMania. If Miz wins the title before then, and then Bryan beats him for it, he gets his big win on the grand stage in New Jersey next year. I mean, this was the match I had originally floated before Money in the Bank. I said Miz can win Money in the Bank, and he could cash in and win the championship, and Bryan has the chase, and eventually he chases Miz all the way to WrestleMania, and he beats him for the title. Now, the reaction they got in Brooklyn does not instill a great deal of confidence in me, because I will say that the crowd was very dead for a good part of that match. But I do think that if built properly, you can get people to a point where they would really want to see Daniel Bryan get that championship back. And who better for him to beat for it and silence than The Miz? I still say that that is a WrestleMania-worthy match. Whether it goes on last or not, it doesn't have to go on last, but that is a WrestleMania-worthy main event, or one of two or three, you know, headline matches on that show. So I'm not saying it's going to happen, but there's still hope. If Miz wins, and he can win the championship from AJ or whoever it may be, maybe at the Royal Rumble or something, they could still get to that destination. Now, with that match already scheduled for October, you're not going to do another singles match at Hell in a Cell, right? It just feels like it's too soon. You may as well just wait, because 2 weeks later, you're going to have another pay-per-view, and that's where the Bryan Miz match should be, because that match now has something riding on it. That match now has something tangible on the line. So the mixed tag, I think, is fine. I don't know if there are people expecting me to shit on this because of Brie Bella being involved. I'm more upset at these rumors of Nikki Bella, you know, headlining Evolution against Ronda Rousey. That, I think, is stupid. That is not a match I want to see. But Brie being involved here and doing the mixed tag thing, I have no problem with that. You know, once Maryse got involved, it was fair game for Brie to get involved. I mean, why wouldn't she be? It actually makes no sense for her not to be involved. Why wouldn't she come out and even the odds and help her husband out? Jeff Hardy got a measure of revenge on Randy Orton in their match. He lost by DQ when he stomped on Orton's gonads. He beat him up all over ringside. He beat him up into the crowd over by the tech area where they have all those equipment cases. He laid Orton out on a table. He climbed up onto a stack of one of those, or maybe it was just one giant equipment case, and he hit a Swanton bomb through the table. And this reminded me of Kofi Kingston giving Randy Orton the boom drop through a table at Madison Square Garden, which feels like a lifetime ago. And things were all downhill from there pretty much for Kofi until a New Day came along. Peyton Royce got a rare singles match on TV. Oh, gee, I wonder why. I wonder why all of a sudden we have a singles match with Peyton Royce on television. She should send you-know-who a thank-you tweet for that. So she pinned Naomi with the perfect plex. Becky Lynch. I've been waiting to address this. Becky Lynch came out to address her actions from SummerSlam. Charlotte won the championship. As you all know, Becky snapped, beat her up. She said Charlotte deserved what she got, and the crowd cheered for it when she said this. She said SummerSlam should have been about her winning the championship. Yes, it should have. Yes, it should have. And then she healed on the fans by saying that, "You act like you're with me, but you're really not." And they cheered for her anyway. She said there was no hashtag for me. There was no boycott for me. She said when Charlotte won, the fans cheered for her. So that's the logic they're using in this promo here. To try to, you know, convince you that Becky was in the wrong and you know, she should have a reason to blame the fans. Because people cheered for Charlotte. There was an audible cheer when the referee hit three and she won the title. Yes, they cheered for Roman Reigns, too. That doesn't mean they like them. It means that they were happy they saw a title change. When John Cena made his big surprise return at the Royal Rumble in 2008, the building exploded. Because it was a great surprise that nobody saw coming. Nobody had predicted it. But guess what? As soon as he hit the ring, he got booed. Because people remembered, hey, we don't like this guy. But people are always going to cheer for the big moments, believe me. So Charlotte comes out, and she goes after Becky. This huge brawl breaks out. They booed Charlotte. They cheered for Becky. It was the same exact reaction that happened in that very same building in Brooklyn two nights earlier. And I watched this, and I just thought to myself, you know, WWE gonna WWE. That's my new phrase. They're going to do what they do best. They miscast people. Charlotte should be the heel. Becky should be the babyface. They built Becky Lynch up for months as this great underdog, only to turn her heel. And then they have her come out on TV and rail against the fans for not being with her. That is real. Honestly, the only part of this I didn't like, of this whole promo segment, was that part. That's the part that I didn't like. It just is completely disingenuous for them to think that the fans are actually going to buy into this false notion that the people are not behind Becky Lynch. It is obvious that the people are behind Becky Lynch. So we can't take anything that she says seriously when it comes to that. They were never not behind her. And then I see Road Dogg on Twitter responding to people, going on the defensive about this storyline that I'm sure he had some hand in. One person tweeted at him saying, you know, the story that we've been told is Becky has had to fight and struggle to earn an opportunity at the title. Charlotte was just handed an opportunity and took the moment away from her best friend. Becky is right and justified in everything she says and is in no way a bad person. To which Road Dogg responded, that's not the story you were told. That's the story you wanted to hear. She had to do the exact same thing that Charlotte did, which is beat Carmella. They both climbed the same exact mountain. That's what Road Dogg said. Now, technically, he's not wrong in that Charlotte, she wasn't simply gifted a championship match. She had to beat Carmella on TV, which Becky also had to do, to qualify for a title match. So I wouldn't say Charlotte was just handed an opportunity necessarily. I think that person could have worded that tweet better, but Road Doggy Dog over here is telling people they both climbed the exact same mountain. What? What? Did Road Dogg look up at the solar eclipse without a pair of sunglasses on, huh? Did he fry his eyeballs? What is he looking at? That's not true. This is coming from somebody who obviously is very closely involved in the creative process on that show. That's some scary shit. That he honestly believes that. That this is the way they actually think about these things. Becky's character didn't just beat Carmella on TV one week to earn a title match at SummerSlam. Becky started racking up wins months ago. After doing nothing for the last year. Losing, that's what she was doing. She was an afterthought. And then, very quietly, she started winning matches. She didn't win at Money in the Bank. But she was winning every week on TV. She was beating Mandy Rose. She was beating Sonya Deville. She was beating this person and that person and racking up wins. Until finally, people started to take notice. And then she beat Carmella on TV to earn a title match at SummerSlam. This was a months-long journey for this character. Charlotte comes back. She came back on the July 31st episode of SmackDown. She saved Becky from a beatdown by Carmella. By the end of that show, her very first night back, she beat Carmella, and Charlotte is added to the championship match at SummerSlam. She got the shot because Paige was pissed at Carmella and wanted to punish her, and so she put her in a match with Charlotte, which Charlotte won. How is that the same thing? That's the same mountain. Really? I'd love to take a look at this mountain. I've never seen a mountain like that before. Now look, in the end, bitchy Becky may end up winning the title. She may end up being more entertaining than wacky babyface Becky, just like Dean Ambrose, right? We had wacky Dean. I'm done with wacky Dean. I'm ready for heel Dean. You could make the same argument here for Becky Lynch. She was this very sort of off-the-walls, wacky character and jokey, and now she's all serious and she's, you know, it's almost like the dark side of Becky Lynch. Hey, what's Solomonster? What's not to like, right? Don't you love it when people turn and they get more dark and more serious? Generally speaking, yeah, I do, actually. And I'm not saying this won't work. I'm just saying that it's being disingenuous if you're trying to argue that these two had the same path and that Becky Lynch, you know, has a storyline beef, a legitimate beef here with the fans. And that's how you justify turning this woman heel after all these months of building her up as this great underdog? Really? Don't treat us like idiots and act like, oh, silly internet fans, lol, am I right? Right? Silly internet fans? Shut up. They're in Toronto this Tuesday. I realize that too. So I suspect the reaction for the two of them won't be much different than it was in Brooklyn. So yet another week. Charlotte will come out. She'll be booed. Becky will come out. She can heal on the fans all she wants to. It's going to be an uphill battle to get her booed. But they could always chalk that up to being in Bizarro World, I guess, right? Lost in all of this, because I don't want this to come off as just being completely negative on all the Becky stuff. Lost in all of this was how fucking good Becky was with her promo. Like, the part where she ragged on the fans aside, right? I don't blame her for that. That was way more talking, I think, than I've ever seen her do in a WWE ring since she came up to the main roster. And I thought she did a great job with it. Then she posted this tweet. She said, you know, if you watched the show on Tuesday, you saw Charlotte when she came out on SmackDown. She walked out and she was sort of holding the championship. And she kept yelling at Becky. She's like, this is what you turned on me for? And she kept saying that over and over. So Becky tweeted this. She said, this is the SmackDown Women's title. Charlotte, I left home for this at 17. I broke ground for this in Japan and Europe while you were playing volleyball and getting a tan. I've built my life around this. So you're damn right I'm coming for this. And you, be ready. Now that's the promo that she should have cut on TV. That was fucking great. But you know, again, just to go back to the whole blaming the fans thing, it's cheap heat. Unless you have a legitimate reason to blast the fans, it comes off as just cheap heat. And she doesn't have a legitimate reason to heel on the fans. But here's the positive of all this. More people talked about Becky Lynch this week than any other single week of her entire career. And her attack on Charlotte at SummerSlam got the biggest reaction of anything on that entire SummerSlam card. Plus, it keeps her in the title picture for a while, so that's good. She's not just being demoted back down the card. If you are a Becky Lynch fan, these are all positive things. But that little Twitter exchange, and I do like Road Dogg. He's not a bad guy. I don't get the sense that, you know, he's a bad dude who just shits on people or anything like that. I think it's kind of nice to see somebody as high up as he is on the food chain there engaging with fans on social media, even if it does, I think he does so to his own detriment sometimes. But when he says stuff like that, it just comes off as so tone deaf. Like, what planet are these people living on? that they cannot seem to understand why the fans would react the way that they did, or they just chalk it up to the fans are just, they're just being contrarian. That's just what they do. And it's infuriating because it's so easy to just sort of chalk it up to that, right? That's just the easy way out. But you and I know that that's not the case. But this is how they think. As predicted, we got a SummerSlam rematch on Tuesday with Andrade Cien Almas and Zelina Vega against Rusev and Lana. This time, it was in front of actual people and not a bunch of empty seats. But this was fun. Almas tried to bring a chair in. Aiden English stopped him, and that allowed Rusev to land a Machka kick and put Almas in the accolade for the quick tap out. Backstage, Lana got Rusev to hug Aiden English after the match. So all is well again in the family, at least for now. At least until we find out that Lana has been carrying on a torrid affair with Aiden English. I love the segment with Samoa Joe and AJ Styles. Renee Young was interviewing AJ on the old Mean Gene platform. And he said, the next time Joe mentions my family, I'm gonna rip his heart out. So someone like playing Kano in Mortal Kombat, I see. Suddenly, Samoa Joe yanks Styles off the stage, locks him in the coquina clutch. AJ passes out. Joe grabs the mic. He grabs the camera guy. He says, come over here. So now he thinks he's Scorpion. And he looks into the camera, directly into the camera, and he calls for AJ's wife, Wendy. And he said, AJ won't be going home to tuck the kids into bed tonight because he's already gone night-night. Find me a better stick guy in this company right now than Samoa Joe. I dare you. It's impossible. You will not find one. I love this. This was great. And in the main event, New Day beat the Bludgeon Brothers to become 5-time tag team champions. Much respect to Eric Rowan. The dude wrestled with a torn bicep he suffered the night before, actually 2 nights before, at SummerSlam. I don't care how much that thing is wrapped up. That can't be an easy injury to work through. I think he had surgery the very next day. He's going to be out for a while, but you would never even know that he was hurt here, so my respect to him. This was no disqualification, so we had tables and ladders and mallets, oh my. Kofi hit Harper with the mallet, laid him across the table for Xavier Woods to hit his giant elbow drop, his springboard elbow. He had quite a bit of distance to make up, too. I mean, he had to go from one side of the ring to the next, but he hit it, and he got the pin, and New Day wins the match. They win the tag team titles. A very enjoyable main event. 4 years and 5 tag team titles later, New Day is still one of the hottest acts in this company. If that is not enough to earn them Hall of Fame status one day, then I don't know what does. You talk about taking a gimmick that had every right to fail and turning it into what they have been able to turn it into. I am sick of all the pancake stuff, and I'm not a big fan of all the stuff they do. But you gotta respect what these three guys have been able to accomplish while still keeping their act popular, because they've been around for a while now. And it's hard to maintain, to maintain your level, your status level, and your level of fan support over a period of time like that, but they've managed to do it. Now they just need some new teams to work with. NXT this week was just a collection of a couple of matches that were taped before TakeOver at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn last weekend. We had Bianca Belair beating Deonna Purrazzo, who was very over in front of that Brooklyn crowd. Although Belair was too. And every time we see Bianca, very impressed. She's getting better. It's obvious they're grooming her for bigger things. And before long, she will be challenging for the NXT Women's Championship. I don't know if she will be challenging at Evolution, or if they're going to go with a rematch with Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler. But it would not shock me to see Bianca in the title hunt as early as Evolution. I don't think it's going to be that long before they put that championship on her. And speaking of championships, we had Pete Dunne defending his NXT UK title against Zach Gibson, a rematch from Royal Albert Hall a few months ago. Excellent match. I said that I got to the building a little bit late. I saw the last half of the match. Well, I got to see the first half. And when you put both halves together, this was a great match. Pete Dunne gets the win in the end with the bitter end. And that was really all there was to it. It was a lot of recap packages, the usual format you would expect from these post-takeover shows. There was one other note I wanted to mention, though. And, you know, we all saw Matt Riddle make his debut appearance at TakeOver in the crowd and get a bro chant started, and I think he's going to do very well. But there was a little bit more on, and by the way, it looks like his first opponent in NXT, based on what I had heard from the tapings, is going to be Cassius Ohno. And so it looks like that may be his first match coming up soon. But the other note on Riddle, there was a note on him in the Observer this week that I thought was interesting. Because there had been reports of there being interest on both the part of New Japan and WWE to signing this guy. And WWE obviously won out in the end. Well, there was a note, there was a video. Lisa, who is Matt Riddle's wife, gave an interview a few weeks ago. And she, you know, acknowledged that he was going to be, you know, probably coming to WWE. And she said that in June, Matt got an offer from New Japan Pro Wrestling. And when WWE found out about the offer, which they did because Riddle told Gabe Sapolsky. And Gabe Sapolsky does work now for NXT. So he obviously went to Triple H and filled him in. And immediately after, all of a sudden, out of the blue, after all this time where they could have signed him and didn't, and they, you know, rumors about they were, you know, worried about his pot usage and all this, and I can never really understand why would they not go after this guy. He's got talent. As soon as they find out that New Japan was interested in him and made an offer, he got a phone call from Triple H. And they had a 30-minute conversation, and after that conversation, he was offered an NXT contract. And lo and behold, here we are. And that just goes to show you, you know, for all this talk about how, well, WWE doesn't see them as competition or them as competition, they don't see New Japan as competition. Of course they do. Of course they do. Everyone is competition, even UFC. It's all competition to them. And right now, WWE is in full-blown talent acquisition mode. It feels like all they're doing is just, they're trying to sign as many people up as they possibly can. Now, I think signing Riddle is smart. It would have been really cool to see him work some of those guys in New Japan. But I think in WWE it was a smart signing, and I think he'll do, at least in NXT, I think he'll do very well for himself. So I'm happy that he has finally ended up there, because it just felt like it was inevitable. But there's also a lot of other guys, and I mentioned Pentagon a little bit earlier, the rumors that Pentagon and Phoenix are being pursued by WWE and could very well end up there. You've got the situation with Cody and the Bucks and Omega and all their contracts coming up. Are they going to go to WWE? Are they not? There's a lot of guys who I don't want to see go to WWE. If for no other reason, because A, I either don't think that they'll know what to do with them, or B, I think a big problem that they're running into right now is, frankly, they just have too many bodies. They have too much talent. I mean, it's good to stockpile enough talent where if guys go down due to injury, or if a lot of NXT people get called up, Triple H can sort of replenish the wells. Oh, we've got people waiting in the wings at the Performance Center. It's good to have sort of those you know, bullets that you can just drop into the chamber. But I think they're just acquiring so many different people that what ends up happening is you've got people on ice who have nothing to do, who either haven't debuted on television yet, or if they have, maybe they make an appearance and then we don't see them again. I mean, that even happened with the Authors of Pain on Raw. Chad Gable, where is he? I think it has as much to do with the fact that they just have too much talent right now as anything else. So I don't like this idea as a fan that, well, we'll just snatch anybody up who we want because we can just pay them a bunch of money. Even if we don't have any ideas for them, we just want them so you can have them. That's exactly what's going on right now. But it's great for the wrestlers because it puts them in prime position to be able to negotiate a deal that is in their own best interest. And look, if they feel that they're being stiffed on money and or lowballed on a contract offer by WWE, they don't have to go. Especially if it's somebody who's had success on the indies or they have a little bit of TV exposure through ROH or Impact, you know, they can parlay that into a very good living for themselves on the independents. They could go overseas. The British wrestling scene is booming right now. You know, they can go to Japan. New Japan is hot. They're expanding into this country now and trying to get a foothold here on television. There's never been a good time, or I should say a better time, if you're an independent wrestler or somebody who kind of falls under that mold, if you're coming from ROH or Impact TV, you've never had more leverage, I think, than you do now. And you can really do well for yourself and call your own shots and make a good living without having to worry about, oh, I got to go to WWE. That's the only way I'm going to become a star. It's the only way I'm going to make six figures. That's not the case anymore. And they showed here with Riddle that if they want somebody bad enough, believe me, they're willing to go after them. So Riddle signing is cool, but a lot of these other guys, I worry about them. Especially, you know, I said before, a guy like a Pentagon. I really think that that would be a bad fit. And I hope that Cody and Omega and the Bucks and them, if they do stick together, they stick together outside of WWE. I think they could do a lot more good that way than they can inside the company. Real quick, I did watch part of Impact this past week for two reasons. One, I wanted to see the Mexican death match with Pentagon and Sami Callihan, which I thought was good. It wasn't as good as the last match they had. And number two, and this is the main reason, I had heard that they killed a kid in storyline, of course, on the show this week, and people were very torn about this. So I watched it, wanted to see what all the fuss was about. I was not offended that they killed a kid, no more so than when Todd shot that kid on Breaking Bad, and what an asshole Todd was, if I may say so. I couldn't stand that guy. Lucha Underground, they kill people all the time. Every week, in fact. So I watched this, and LAX, they had won their street fight the week before against the OGs, and they were at a party here on this show. It was a vignette. It wasn't in the ring or anything. They're at a party. It would be kind of funny if they killed a kid in the ring. Actually, it wouldn't be funny. But they're at a party, and they're talking about how this feud is finally over, and, you know, we won. And they go to leave the party. I guess they're going to go to Conan's car or something. And they have a kid with them. They have a little kid named Richie. He even had a replica belt over his shoulder. So they cut to show one of the OGs in their car, and the car starts racing down the street. As soon as they see LAX coming out of this party, the car comes racing down the street to try to run them all over, right? They tried to Rikishi them, but they all got out of the way, everybody except for little Richie. They saw him down on the ground. They raced over to help him. And then for a brief period here, we saw things from the kid's perspective. We could hear his little heart beating. We saw his eyes were slowly closing. Yeah, now look, maybe this week we find out the kid's in a coma or something. They didn't outright say that he was killed. But it sure left you with the impression that that's what happened, right? Now, none of that bothered me because I just looked at it as some, you know, kind of goofy television shit. That didn't bother me. What bothered me was they cut back to Josh Matthews and Don Callis in the arena at the announce desk. And they start playing this cheesy, dark, sort of brooding music in the background. And Josh, basically, in so many words, goes, well, the show must go on. They talk about it like it's just another wrestling segment. I mean, they were very downtrodden, and they did the whole, like, low voices, like some tragic event just occurred. They did try to, it wasn't like he was smiling and laughing and all that kind of stuff, but that was basically what he said. Like, the show must go on. Just another segment. And Don Callis is like, well, something's got to be done about this rivalry. And Josh Matthews then just starts casually running down next week's card. Couldn't you at least cut to a fucking commercial or something? Like, is Richie's life not even worth an ad break? The kid gets run down in cold blood, and seconds later, Josh Matthews is talking about Sue Young defending her Knockouts title. Like, how anybody could take that segment seriously after that, I have no idea. That was my only real beef with it, really. I mean, the whole thing was goofy, I guess, but you can't even just do, like, an ad break after something like that. You gotta go right into the next segment. Hey, let's run down the card for next week. So I'm dedicating this week's podcast to the memory of Richie. And now I'm moving on to Lucha Underground. And the murderous rampage continues with yet another fatality. The body count is racking up on this show. A lot of blood and gore this week, more than usual. Show opened with Dragon Azteca Jr. confronting Melissa Santos in the locker room. He could tell that she was still very, she was crestfallen about the death of Phoenix. That's a word I don't think that gets used enough these days. Crestfallen. I like that word. So she's very upset. You know, obviously she lost her boyfriend in that Grave Consequences match many weeks ago against Mil Muertes. So Dragon Azteca hands her one half of a broken, you know, it's a broken medallion. It's one half of a medallion to wear around her neck as a necklace. And he tells her that Phoenix will always be with her in her heart if she wears it. The guy is shooting his shot now that Phoenix is out of the picture. I see what you're doing here. You can't fool me. And I don't blame him either. I would do the exact same thing. We head inside the temple. There is a steel cage set up. There are weapons hanging from all four sides of the cage. And among those weapons were an axe and a machete. Machete. Great movie, by the way. Now, this is what I call an Extreme Rules match, right? I'm looking at these weapons here. I'm like, this is how you do a fucking Extreme Rules match. But they called it a haunted house match, and they had Halloween decorations all around and webs and pumpkins, and I think that this was originally meant to air around Halloween. Somehow, though, it's August. I don't know why it's airing now. It just feels very weird. But Halloween is my favorite holiday, so Halloween in August is okay with me. So the match was the Mac against Mil Muertes. Mil Muertes comes down to the ring with Katrina. And Katrina makes a beeline. She goes right over to Melissa Santos, grabs a microphone, and says, "You forgot to introduce me. So now, do it the correct way, bitch." As if I couldn't love this woman anymore. Melissa stands up in her face and she says no, and so Katrina beats the shit out of her. She slams her head into the cage repeatedly, she grabs a flower vase, she gives Melissa the lick of death, and she slams her face first down into the vase on the... Is it vase or vase? I feel like it could be said both ways. I always go back and forth with these two things. Tomato, tomato. But anyway, she smashes the vase over her head. And that's just what they did to the ring announcer. Wait until you hear what they did to poor Mac here in this match. So Mil goes to spear Mac through the side of the cage. Panel only gives halfway. It looked like they were supposed to go completely through. It just didn't give. Kind of like, you know, Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns in Saudi Arabia in their cage match. So they fought outside for a little bit. Eventually they got back inside. I guess no escape the rules. No escape the cage rules here in Lucha Underground. Back inside. Mil goes over to the side of the cage. He grabs the giant knife. He grabs the machete that was hanging on the side of the cage. And he hits Mac in the head with it. He slices him open. And then Mil licks the blood off of the blade. Mac is just bleeding profusely. Somehow, he had a spine buster on Mil through one of the tables that had been propped up in the corner. And Mil then returned in kind. He speared Mac through the table on the opposite side. So Mac climbs up to the top rope. Excuse me. Mil catches him, right? Catches him up top. Climbs up top. Now don't forget, the table is still set up down below. These two guys are up there. They're on the middle rope, top rope, whatever it was. And Mil Muertes gives the Mac, and the Mac is a big dude. He gives him a flatliner from the top through the table down below. And he gets the pin. He spiked Mac right on top of his head. He got full rotation on this flatliner as he came down. It looked great. After the match, Mil ordered Katrina into the ring to give Mac the lick of death. But I guess licking some random dude's blood is not her thing. And so she refused and she walked off. A violent match. That is not for everyone, but if you are into the hardcore stuff and the blood and the gore, you will love this. My boy, Famous B, he took over the ring announcing from Melissa Santos. He was in a wheelchair. He had his foot in a boot, still recovering from what Jack Swagger did to his ankle. 7 screws and 3 surgeries it took, he says, but he'll be good as new soon. Yeah, until somebody cuts his leg off. The way things are going on this show, I wouldn't put it past them. I'm worried for Famous B. He went to announce the first man for the next match, and when he looked down at his note card, he let out an "oh shit." And for good reason, because it was the man who put him in that wheelchair, the Savage, Jake Strong. He took on Aerostar. Maybe he can lead our new Space Force, Aerostar. Not much of a match. Strong tapped him out with the ankle lock, would not let go. He was going to break his ankle when Drago came out with nunchucks. to make the save for his friend. Because if I see somebody with nunchucks, I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. And that's what Swagger did. Then came a really creepy segment. But a good one, I thought. I actually enjoyed this. I like the slow descent into madness for the Ricky Mundo character. So we have Johnny Mundo, Taya, PJ Black, and Jack Evans, right? The worldwide underground, they're backstage, celebrating the upcoming nuptials from Mundo and Taya. They're getting married next week. So they're exchanging gifts. And Taya gives Johnny a giant frame photo of himself holding the Lucha Underground title, which made him very sad because he's not the champion anymore. Although he also called the photo the most beautiful thing he had ever seen. He said this, mind you, with his soon-to-be wife sitting next to him. She told him, no, don't be depressed, don't worry. I went to Antonio Cueto. And she said that Johnny is going to get a Lucha Underground Championship match the week after their wedding. So in 2 weeks. So we have the wedding this Wednesday, and then the title match the following week. So meanwhile, this is all going on, right? They cut to outside the temple where we see Ricky Mundo, who has been, I guess, banished to guard duty outside. Johnny's agent, Benji, that we've seen a few times this season on this show, he shows up with a gift. He says, oh, I'm late for the party. Ricky says, well, I don't see your name on the list. And Benji says that, look, I was invited because I'm useful to Johnny, whereas you are standing out here because you are useless to Johnny. And we hear Ricky's creepy doll telling him, you know, he can't speak to you that way. Show him just how useful you can be. Show him just like you showed Angelico. So poor Angelico. So Ricky tells Benji, all right, you can come in, but first, check this out. And he hands him a pen. And Benji looks at it and he goes, oh, he goes, is this the pen that you used to have Johnny sign all of his autographs with? And that was the last insult. Ricky says, well, not anymore. And he proceeds to snap Benji's neck like he's Stallone in Rambo. And with the creepy doll laughing in the background, he begins to violently stab at Benji with the pen. And we see blood, like buckets of blood, splattering all over the place, even on the doll. They cut back to the wedding party. Taya is screaming, but she's screaming at the gift that Jack Evans got them, matching bandanas. They have no idea that Benji is being murdered right outside the door. Cut back one final time. We see a bloody Ricky Mundo and his cackling little bastard of a doll. Let's stop here for a second, if I may. In the span of 2 days this week, we had a gang drive-by on Impact where a young boy was presumably killed. And then on this show, we had Mil Muertes attempt to kill the Mac with a machete, and Ricky Mundo literally killed someone by stabbing them to death with a pen. That's a pretty violent week in wrestling history, I would say. The closest thing I could think of that would even be remotely comparable that happened in WWE this week would be the Bludgeon Brothers using their giant mallets on the New Day at SummerSlam, and that was child's play compared to what we saw here. Main event was Pentagon Dark defending his Lucha Underground title against Cage in a Last Man or Machine standing match. If you're looking for a great hardcore match, Pentagon's Mexican death match with Sammy Callahan on Impact was good, but this match was excellent. Right away, they're fighting, and Cage is ripping Pentagon's mask off. He managed to rip it off about, you know, half of it away. Pentagon smashed a bottle over Cage's head. It had no effect. Instead, Cage broke a bottle on the ring post and grabbed one of the shards of glass. And he began to cut away at Pentagon's forehead. So now Pentagon is bleeding profusely. The second person on this show, actually the third person, if you count Benji. We had the Mac, we had Benji, and now we have Pentagon, all bleeding like stuck pigs here. Cage sets up a table in the corner. Pentagon gives him a Death Valley driver through the table, and this thing fucking exploded on Impact. And I don't mean the television show Impact. I have to specify here. All these guys are on the same show. Cage is on Impact and Lucha Underground. Pentagon is also on Impact and Lucha Underground. But the table, in this case, exploded on Impact. Cage is so big and jacked up. The table literally exploded. Chair shot to Cage's skull, and it wasn't the only one. I don't like it, but the story they were telling here is that Cage took a ton of abuse to his head, just from beginning to end here in this match. Ultimately, it would lead to the finish. Cage delivered a suplex to Pentagon from the inside to the outside, down through two tables set up on the floor. That was pretty crazy. Cage brought a cinder block into the ring, but Pentagon hit him in the head again, this time with the trash can lid. And Pentagon then gave him a Mexican destroyer from the top rope through a table, which was insane. But he was not done with him yet. Pentagon gave him a package pile driver onto a bunch of chairs that were set up in the ring. And instead of letting the referee count, you know, Cage down, it is a last man standing match. Pentagon put Cage's arm, I should say. He put it in a chair, like he was going to Pillmanize it. And he did. He stomped on it. And then he took Cage's other arm and he snapped that arm. Then he went back to the other arm that he had Pillmanized and he broke that arm too. So that's two broken arms here for Cage. And still, this guy is struggling to get back up to his feet. He's got no arms. He's got no working arms, but he's trying to get back up. He's got his head resting on the cinder block, and he's using that to try to push off of, to try to get up. But once his head was on the cinder block, Pentagon saw this. He gave him a curb stomp through the cinder block, and that was all she wrote. The crowd counted along all the way to the count of 10, and Pentagon retains his Lucha Underground championship. What a fucking match this turned into. Just a violent spectacle. Crazy stuff from these two. And now this week, it's the wedding of Johnny and Taya. We'll see if they both live through it, because you know Ricky is going to be involved somehow. And that doll. So I suspect this will not end well. Add Benji the Agent now to the body count this season for Lucha Underground, and I've lost track of how many people have been killed off. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can send them in to me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We'll try to get through a few here. I don't have time for too many, but we'll start here with Alex from Columbus, Georgia. With the recent announcement of Pentagon Jr. versus Kenny Omega for All In, I know you are a big fan of Pentagon. I just want to get your thoughts on this match, and should Pentagon go over? It's weird. I've gotten a few questions like this. Who should win this match? And I don't look at this show that way. Maybe it's just because there's been none of that week-to-week television, although they do have stories that have been progressing on being the Elite. But to me, this is not a show where it really matters who wins what match. I mean, I'd like I said earlier when I was doing my rundown of the All-In card, I think it's probably Bernard the Bear, you know, winning the Battle Royal and getting an ROH title match. But boy, I would love it if it was Neville as a surprise entry, right? And he went on to win the championship. And I think it would be a plus for the NWA title if they put the belt on Cody. And Cody could take that around with him for a while. So there are certain match outcomes that I'd like to see. But I don't look at this show like I might a WWE show or some other show and say, oh, this guy should win, or, you know, who should go over, they want to bury this guy. Like, that's not what this show is. So to me, it doesn't matter who wins. Pentagon doesn't have to win. It could be Pentagon, it could be Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega is the IWGP champion, if that matters to you. You could argue that he shouldn't lose to Pentagon for that reason, but maybe that's how New Japan feels. I don't care. I think it's going to be a great match. I've never seen them match up before. I think this might be their first time having a singles match. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I think it's going to be a great match, a fun match. And to me, it doesn't matter really who wins, because that's not what All In is supposed to be about. Russell from Tampa, Florida. Sasha Banks did an interview with Peter Rosenberg, basically admitting that she does not like Alexa Bliss. There have been rumors for some time of there being heat between the two of them. Do you know what it stems from? And of the two, who do you think has meant more to WWE overall? So what Russell is referring to is a sit-down interview that Sasha did with Rosenberg on his show. He has a show called Open Late. You can find it on YouTube. It was really good, by the way. He had a bunch of wrestlers on. He had New Day on with him. Then he had footage of a double date. He and his wife went to a restaurant with Rusev and Lana, and that was on there as well. And then at the end, they brought in Sasha, and Sasha sat down with him for an interview. And I learned something I did not know about Sasha, which is that she did not attend high school with other kids. She went to an online school, and she did that because she could stay home. She had a brother that had some sort of disability. So she admits that when she was younger and she was, you know, quote unquote in school, she wasn't in school like you and I were in school. She didn't have the chance to really interact with other kids her age, and she never had any friends. She never got to form those relationships that you would form with people if you went to school. So she admits, you know, she had a chip on her shoulder in NXT. She still does. And she also admitted that there are people on the roster that she does not like, which is normal, right? I'm sure you work with people that you don't like. I don't know of anybody who works, unless you work in an office of five people. Most people, I would wager, when you speak to them, probably have at least that one person who works in their office that they don't like very much. So that's not really news. But Rosenberg sort of piggybacked on this, and he brought up Alexa Bliss and how it looks like there may be some sort of legitimate, either a beef or some legitimate bad feelings between the two of them. And to that end, Sasha's answer was, "I think I'm really good at what I do." And he asked her if, you know, she would like to do more with Alexa. And she said, "Not really." And she said, "Look, if WWE wants to do, you know, me against Alexa, I have no problem doing it because I am a professional and I do my job very well," she says. But she also says she doesn't think there's really anything more to tell in that story for them to pursue it on TV. You should watch the interview. You can just hear the way that she answered and see the way that she reacted to some of these questions. It's very obvious. I mean, maybe they're just working us. It's always possible, but I think that they're probably, whatever it is, she's not very fond of Alexa Bliss. And she's just not her favorite person in the world. Now, I don't know if Alexa feels the same way or if the heat is really only one way. It could just be that Sasha has some kind of beef with her and Alexa really would love to make up with her and be friends. We just don't know. I remember Sasha broke Alexa's nose once in NXT in a match, and there are some people who think maybe that had something to do with it. I don't buy that for a second. I think that's ridiculous. Although not to say that maybe Sasha didn't, you know, stiffer on the blow, and maybe that's why she broke her nose, but maybe whatever, you know, heat or ill feeling she may have had for Alexa, I would imagine probably predates that match. I don't think, you know, the broken nose is not the cause of anything, so it could be anything, right? Some people just don't like each other. Some people just give off a vibe, or there's something about them. You just, you know, maybe Sasha just got to know her a little bit at the Performance Center, or she overheard conversations Alexa would have and didn't like something she said. It literally could be anything. And, you know, we still don't know, but they are professional. They can work together. They have worked together. It's not like they haven't worked matches on the main roster together, right? They also were the two females that were in that. They made such a big deal about two women wrestling in Abu Dhabi. Well, the match was Sasha against Alexa when they wore those full body suits and they had a match. So they've definitely, you know, worked together before. But I just wonder, you know, I see so much hate online directed towards Alexa Bliss. And believe me, Alexa has her fans as well. As does Sasha, as does Roman. There are obsessive, scary, frightening people out there who take fandom to a level that I think is very unhealthy. But there's a lot of hate also online, I see, for Alexa, for the way that she's pushed. She's pushed so hard, first on SmackDown, then on Raw. People don't think she's that good of a wrestler. Why is she being pushed so hard? There's so many people who are better than her. And this is just me talking here. Maybe Sasha sees this giant spotlight on Alexa, while she herself has to be frustrated as all hell by the way that she's been used on TV. And maybe there's some resentment there for it. That, to me, is the most plausible explanation. Unless this heat dates all the way back to NXT, before Alexa was really being pushed so hard, but I wouldn't be surprised if that resentment has built up over the years. If Sasha was the number one kind of alpha dominant female on the show and was involved in title feuds and all that kind of stuff the way that Alexa has been, I don't know that she would necessarily feel the same way, but you gotta think on some level she probably looks at this and says, look at what they have her doing. She seems to always be in the title picture. I think Alexa's a great character. I don't think she's by any means the best wrestler on the roster. She may be one of the worst. But the reason that she's pushed so hard is because she's got a personality. She's got charisma. She's got, you know, this whole heel act down to a T. And I think she plays that character very well. So I think that's a big part of why she's been featured so much and why she's done very well. It's not because of her wrestling. It's because of her personality. But you gotta know that Sasha Banks has got to be frustrated as all hell at what they've done with her, what they haven't done with her, her role right now on the show. She doesn't have much of one. But yet there's Alexa Bliss, right? Always putting the title on her, which gets her into the main events of the pay-per-views. And she's working with Ronda Rousey at SummerSlam, and it looks like they're going to work together again at Hell in a Cell. It's impossible for me to think that there isn't some resentment there. And probably not just from Sasha, probably from some of the other women too. But you also asked me in that question, you know, do I think who has meant more of the two to WWE overall? Alexa has by far been pushed the harder of the two, and she's been in the title picture more often, but I still think that Sasha Banks has meant more. I think Sasha has meant more overall than Alexa. I really do think that years from now, when you have these new women's wrestlers coming up and coming into the Performance Center and getting into wrestling, you know, they're going to point to people like Charlotte and Sasha Banks as the reasons why they decided to get into wrestling. Believe me, 10, 15 years from now, the next generation of female talent, there's going to be video packages, the Mae Young Classic Season 10, and they're going to be talking about, I got into wrestling because I turned the TV on one day and I saw Sasha against Bayley, or I saw Charlotte against Sasha, and I fell in love with it. I guarantee you, the way that some of the current women talk about, well, it was Trish and Lita. I remember watching Trish Stratus and Lita wrestling in the main event on Monday Night Raw, the first time two women had really ever done that before, even though I think it was really Lita and Stephanie. But you have women now who say that sort of thing, and they credit Trish and Lita for that. And I guarantee you that those, the horsewomen, you could throw Becky in there, those are the women that are going to be given credit for that, and this whole next new crop of women that come in. I guarantee you. Because Charlotte and Sasha and Becky and Bayley will forever be linked, and Paige too. Let's not forget about Paige's role in this. They will always be linked to the start, and AJ Lee, whether they want to admit it or not, to the beginning of this whole quote-unquote women's revolution inside this company. For that reason alone, plus all the matches they had in NXT before even getting to the main roster, without that body of work, I'm not sure that we have the level of emphasis that we have right now on the women. Or that people get pissed off enough at the time to start a hashtag. Because people could see, we have all this female talent. They saw what was going on in NXT and the matches that they were having. And they got pissed and they said, why are these women coming on and getting 30 seconds every week? So they start a hashtag to get this thing trending. Now the Bella Twins have meant more than either one of them. And that's probably going to trigger a lot of people, but look, I'm no huge fan of the Bellas, but any objective person would have to admit that. If you're looking in terms of their role and the impact that they've had on the company, then the Bellas are ahead of both of them. But of the two, of Sasha and Alexa, I think Sasha has meant more than Alexa has overall to the company. Michael from Davenport, Iowa. My best friend and I were talking wrestling, and he brought up Hulk Hogan of late, teasing an NWO reunion on Twitter. My friend was very excited about the prospect of an NWO reunion, especially if they introduce some newer faces to the faction. I was less enthused about the idea because I feel like in an era where many of the modern factions are modeled after the NWO, such as Bullet Club and Undisputed Era, a revived NWO would not stand out. However, this provoked another idea. Are there any old acts that could be revived and succeed in the modern era of wrestling? Well, let me just talk about this NWO thing first. I've seen Hogan also putting these videos out. My guess is it's some sort, I don't know if it's some sort of merchandise thing or what. I don't know what exactly is going on there. I don't read into that as, oh, there's going to be an NWO reunion on television. That ain't going to happen. So I don't think that's what that is. And I think that would be a big mistake anyway. I don't want to see the NWO back on TV. I don't think people are pining to see the NWO back on TV. We already had the NWO back on TV in 2002, 16 years ago, and that failed. And they were a hell of a lot closer to the Monday Night War period where the NWO was first very popular. And if anything, it should have been a much bigger success then than it would today. It failed then, it would fail now. The NWO is a memory that people have. It really was this invading faction. The reason it worked was because it was positioned as these three guys from up north are coming down here and they're invading. Now, people, you know, got added to the group and it got watered down and it went on for too long and it died a death. And I'm not saying the NWO initials aren't marketable. I think they should absolutely be marketed and you can make money off them, but not as an act on television. I think the NWO should stay dead and buried. So that's my thoughts on that. Now, as far as there being another act, an older faction, let's say, that could be revived, that could work today, the first thing that comes to mind are the Horse Women. And that could apply to the wrestling one, which, you know, Charlotte, Sasha, Becky, and Bayley, or the MMA version, which they now have all four of them under contract. They have Ronda Rousey, they have Shayna Baszler, they have Marina Shafir, and they have Jessamyn Duke. They're all under contract, and I'm sure at some point we will get a horsewomen faction on television. Depending on how that's booked and how that goes, and that's a little bit different because now it's women and not men like it was all those years ago, but I think that could work. I think that could work. I don't know if you would consider that a revival of an old concept. It really is just an old concept in name, you know, calling themselves the horsewomen. I don't think Ronda and Shayna are going to be getting on TV telling all the men watching, hey, we're going to be at this hotel tonight, come ride Space Mountain. Although that would be kind of funny. But I think of them, in terms of another faction to revive that I think could work, I think of the Corporation. And I'm not talking Ted DiBiase's from 95. I'm talking the corporate team, the Corporation from 98, which was led by Vince and Shane. I think that something like that, and it's not the authority. It's not the authority. I'm not really thinking of the authority. But some sort of corporate faction where you have, you know, a certain number of guys in there, who would lead it. I don't know who the best person to lead that. I'm trying to think who the best person would be. It's not going to be Vince. I sure as shit don't want it to be Stephanie. I guess it could be Triple H. But I just feel like a heel corporate faction with the right people, led by whoever, let's say, the authority figure is on Raw. Right now it's Corbin. Hopefully that's temporary. I don't know. I feel like that could work. That could probably get some good heat. As long as the focus, and this is the difference between something like the authority and what I'm thinking of here. The authority, the focus was really always on Triple H and Stephanie. I do not want to see that. With the corporate team, it's just a bunch of kiss asses who are, you know, banding together under one heel authority figure of some kind. And it's just a heel faction that runs roughshod on the show. I think that concept is tried and true. I mean, it doesn't even have to be the corporate team. You can call them some other name. But I think if you have the right collection of guys, that could absolutely work. And maybe it's just a matter of waiting until Undisputed Era comes up to the main roster and just going with those guys. But I'm not too keen on resurrecting old acts, though. Like, that's the closest thing I could think of. But I wouldn't bring back the Four Horsemen. I wouldn't bring back the Hart Foundation. I wouldn't... At some point, you've got to stop bringing back old stuff and just focus on coming up with newer, more creative ideas. Because, you know, there's only so many times you can go back to that well. And also, frankly, you just have a situation where it can never be as good as the original. It's not fair to the newer guys to have a new Four Horsemen. Every iteration of the Four Horsemen after the original few was more inferior than the one that came before it. I saw that clip that was floating around on Twitter this week from some Nitro match back in 97 or 98 when Mongo McMichael was part of the Horsemen. He looked fucking terrible. This guy had two left feet. I'm shocked that he had the kind of success he had. He was a member of the Four Horsemen, really? I don't think that's one of those periods people look back on as being a memorable, great legacy for the Four Horsemen to have. Some things just need to be left alone. They need to be left in the past, and you got to just move on and come up with newer, fresher ideas. So, not big on bringing back old stuff, and the NWO is certainly not one of those things that I'm all that excited about being brought back. And DeMarcus from Nashville. I've been watching more of Raw and SmackDown from the early 2000s because Raw is simply unwatchable to me. But I watched William Regal and realized how underrated he was. He had the ability to be truly hated. He was a decent wrestler. A decent wrestler, you say. He could cut a decent promo and had mannerisms and looks that made him one of a kind. I think of how many times Triple H has held the championship, and I thought I would pose this buy or sell to you. As the better world champion, if the powers that be had chosen to go down this road in the early 2000s, buy or sell William Regal or Triple H? That's an interesting one. William Regal will be the first person to admit that he screwed up. And he doesn't blame anybody else for it but himself. He doesn't blame WWE. He doesn't blame WCW. You know, in WCW, he had a big drug problem, which spilled over into his career in WWE, almost died. And then many years later, when he was getting that big push as the GM, and, you know, he would turn the lights out when the fans weren't reacting the way they wanted him, he wanted them to. King Regal, he had a good thing going. And I said at the time that you could give Regal even just a short run with the World Heavyweight Championship. Absolutely. That version of Regal, which would have been back in like 07, 08, absolutely could have had a short run with the world title, without question. And maybe it was more like 08, 09. It's somewhere in that period. But he fucked up. He got popped on a wellness violation right in the middle of his big push, and that was it. They never really had any trust or faith put in him again after that. And he admits that, look, it's my fault. I fucked up. So that's why he didn't. I think he should have. But who would have made the better world champion? I think I'm going to say Triple H. I'm going to buy on Triple H over Regal, as much as it pains me to say that, just because it, you know, I was not a fan at all of his reign of terror in 2002 when he was the world champion, and not a fan of that run, not a fan of that version of Triple H at all. And to me, it made for a very, very dark days on Monday Night Raw. Maybe not as dark as they are today, but I was not a fan of that period. However, Triple H was a very good champion. It was very easy to hate him. He knew how to get heat. I thought that he was a better, from a match perspective, I can't really recall there being as many in-ring sort of classics with Regal as Triple H had. And maybe it's just because Regal never had the chance to work big pay-per-view matches against Austin and Rock and Foley. And had he, maybe he would have also been able to, you know, build up a resume like Triple H did. I just feel like in the long term, as a world champion in that company, Triple H was the better fit for that role. I never really viewed Regal as being any sort of long-term, multiple-time champion. One time, yes, absolutely, and it's too bad it didn't happen. But I would still buy, as an overall performer, in terms of, I don't know, just promos and being a heel, match quality, and Triple H was certainly helped by always being flanked by other people, whether it was China, or DX, or Evolution, or Flair. He always had somebody with him. I'm going to go with Triple H. I think in the long run, overall, I think he would have been the better sort of world champion performer. But Regal deserved a run with the title, and unfortunately, he screwed himself out of it. So, what are you going to do? If you have questions for the mailbag, you could email them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. And please always include your name and where you are from when you write in. You can follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. Follow me on Instagram, @TheSolomonster. And don't forget that the House of Glory content is going to be going up on their YouTube channel this week over the next few days. You could check out the fallout from their High Intensity 7 show and leave some feedback on there for me or tweet me. And I'll be back with episode 562 next weekend. That's Labor Day weekend here in this country. And also All In weekend. We have the big All In StarCast convention is coming up. I will not be there. I'm having my my little knee operation this week, but I will be there in spirit. Looks like a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot going on. I know they're streaming that as well on Fight TV. You have to pay a certain fee, and you can watch the stream from StarCast. They have all these different live podcasts and things that are going to be going on there. Conrad, I know, has been burning the midnight oil here. He's been burning the candle at both ends, putting this thing together, and he has since said that this will be a one-off. There will not be a StarCast 2 unless somebody else wants to take over, because he bit off more than he can chew. He's had a lot of late nights putting this thing together, dealing with different talent and the logistics of everything. It definitely felt to me, and I just from when I talked to him a few months ago, and he was pitching all these different ideas that he had for this convention, and I thought to myself, I go, wow, that's a lot, you know. And a lot of it came to fruition. He got Jim Johnston is going to be there. It sounds like there's a lot of cool stuff happening next weekend. But yeah, there's a lot. And if he's sort of the main point person putting this whole thing together, and he's got a full-time job, he has all the other podcasts that he does, yeah, I could see where he probably would say, yeah, this is a one and done. I'm not doing this again. But if he does, who knows? Maybe we'll be part of the next one. But All In is next Saturday, and I don't know how many of you plan on watching it. I will watch it. I will review it here on the show next week. And yeah, that's about it for now. That's all I got. So until next time, be well, stay safe. Thank you, as always, for all of your support and tuning in each and every week. I appreciate the hell out of you for it. And I will see you back here for more Sound Off. We're going to be all in next weekend. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
They have Kane in the back. This is what he said. Tonight, I will delight as I enter the abyss with a fellow monster, but it is I who will climb out alone and with a smile across my face.
Oh, oh my God.
What do they think this is, Shakespeare?
I was driving yesterday, and some asshole double parks his car in the service lane.
I should have cut a promo the way the WWE would script one out for me. Why art thou parking like one's smelly orifice? I wish 1,000 deaths upon thee. Then I could do a fucking tope and we could fade to commercial.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Sala Monster Sound Off.